Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to episode number 4 of the Modern Masculinity Project. I am your host, Brad Pinky, or Bradley, as some people in my life call me here and there, which is completely fine. I actually get asked that quite a bit, which would you rather be called, Brad or Bradley? And to be honest, I don't really care. Call me whatever you want to call me. Hell, I'll even answer my brother's name, Brett, if that's what you want to go with. I've probably been called Brett just as much as I have been Brad in my life, which is, I guess, kind of my parents' fault for naming their kids Brett and Brad. At any rate, while I don't really care about Brad versus Bradley, I do kind of like when I'm called Bradley, when it comes from a select few people. But I haven't really figured out why that is, why that it matters that it only comes from a certain few people. You know, thinking about it now, which is in line with another thought that I've been wrestling with, is that it makes me feel a bit more connected with my feminine. You know, the name itself isn't necessarily feminine, but feels more gentle, more caring, more nurturing to me. But why I only like it when it comes from certain people is beyond me. Maybe it helps me feel like I am putting my masculine and feminine in more balance, and it matters who it comes from, or I don't know. I just think, you know, speaking to that balance between those two, I think it's good for us to all find that balance. And I'm not sure, as a man especially, we haven't been encouraged to do so. And I want to talk more about this, finding that balance, and kind of exploring that a little bit after this conversation, which is with one of those select few people who I'm actually like calling me Bradley. Ed Rogers is our guest today, host of Portland's number 2 podcast, Puck Fortland. I need to say that mindfully, Puck Fortland. Definitely give his podcast a listen. It's a great snapshot of what Portland is, which is Portland, Oregon, which is wonderfully weird and yet very heartfelt, which also describes Ed himself. He's an incredibly warm, caring, and gentle dude, and a wonderful teacher as well. Ed has served as my podcast guru, my bro-sidon, my broby one cabroby, if you will, helping me get this podcast thing figured out, which I'm still learning, but he's always been a kind of a rock there for me to help out. But he's just a great guy who's really helped me out quite a bit with this. So, and you know, the story of how we met is a kind of your typical bromance, which often involves a drink, perhaps a joint, as ours did. And we talk about that bromantic encounter and much, much more in this episode, including Ed being on the cusp at the time of becoming a father. This was really a powerful conversation for me personally, as I try to see the value in leaning more towards my feminine most of the time, as I do, and at least I feel I do. And for men, I don't feel that leaning feminine, even 51%, let's say, is often rewarded or seen as a positive character trait for men, which, you know, we'll talk about that. It was also powerful because it reminded me about another email that my dad sent my way. If you recall from episode number 3, I read the email he sent to me about his tumor, which was about 3 sentences long. Well, this one is about love and being a proud father. I will read that one after this conversation, which starts right now. Episode number 4 of the Modern Masculinity Project. What did you learn today with Ed Rogers?
Mm-hmm. flows fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy, steady flow. The rock stopped me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below. I eat what is fed me, I can cause a deadly blow. And still the river flows, only heaven knows where the two winds flow, where the rivers flow.
Yeah, you gotta, right? Sounds pretty good.
These are, how are you doing, love? I like these
are,
a lot.
These are gonna have some discipline on these mics, but they're good. They sound good.
I'm a trained professional.
Trained professional.
It's something really good,
dude. You should get a setup like this in your lift. Just get in there and have a podcast rolling.
Dude, you can hook these up. No problem.
No problem. It'd be easy. Be easy to do. Can you, because I mean, even some of the conversations, like $1,000 plate of dinner guy you were just telling me about,
this is a good one. So I'm in Camas. Somebody in North Portland was like, we're going out to Camas, you know, you can end up going anywhere. Get out to Camas, drop them off. I get a ping. Oh, okay, there's, you know, a little profile. I can't remember the girl's name, but
How does that work? Does it just, you're in the area, we're talking about Lyft here, you're in the area, it pings you to pick up this person, their profile pops up. Is that all that happens?
Yeah, you can accept it or decline it. You can see their little rating. It'll show you how many stars they have. If they're
just like, fuck, nah, bro.
4.9, or if there's like, my theory is I don't think too many drivers, I guess I don't know. So this is a theory. You don't really want to give a bad rating to your passenger because you're hoping they'll tip. So after you complete the ride, you can like open up their thing and send them a little thank you and give them like 5 stars. And then they're like, oh, your ride's over. Would you like to tip Edward? And then it gives them the option to say no, or it gives them like $1, $2, yeah. $5. I think it should be 5, 10, 15.
Other.
Yeah, it should be.
Make them work for that dollar. Way, right.
The buttons should already be, I'm going to write a complaint to Lyft. Yeah. It should already start at like $20.
That's a good idea, actually.
Yeah, just make it more. So, because they're just pushing the button. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, $1. And you're like, that's not even. Anyway.
Yeah.
So you see who pops up. So this girl comes out of this house really quick. I don't really get a chance to turn around. I'm still like fudging with the app. And she hops in and she puts her jacket over her head. And she sort of just like shudders and that's it. And I'm like, pick up, start the ride. It shows me where she's going. She's going back to Portland. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, fuck. Like, this is the first, I haven't had experience like this. So start driving. I'm like, well, let me just see. And I'm thinking the whole time, I'm like trying to look at her profile. And I can't tell if she's like young, like a runaway. You know, I'm like, maybe this girl's had something just happened. She's like crying. So I don't know what to do. And I'm just driving. I look and I'm like, I'm going down into North Portland again. I'll be close to home. More familiar grounds. We'll see where I drop her off. And then I'll sort of assess the situation. Dead silence the whole way. She's covered the whole time. And I'm like, oh, all these thoughts are going through my head. Finally, we pull up in front of PCC, the college. And I was like, you know, miss, if you're in trouble or like need help, I can totally help you. Like I can turn off the app and we can go whatever you need. If you're, if you're hurt or something. And slowly she like pulls the jacket like over her face. And she was like, ah, bro, I'm just mega hungover. And I was like, what? She's like, the light, I can't even like take light. You know, it's like hurting my eyes. I'm like fucking hungover as fuck. And I was like, oh, I thought you were like running away from home. She's like, no, I'm going to science class.
Yeah,
like,
of course. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, I was like, good for you. Still going to school. She's like, I will not miss class. She's like, I'll go. I'm making it. She's like, I just can't. The light's killing me.
In typical community college fashion, they're just showing up, just hungover as hell over.
So she hopped out of the car. And when I pulled away, I just yelled, stay in school.
Stay in school.
Stay in school. She gave me like the fist bump. Was like, she was hurting. But situations like that, you never.
Well, when I was living in London, I got the flu for the first time in a long time, and like body aches. And I woke up and literally couldn't get out of bed. And I was like, just going to the hospital. There's something wrong. And of course, it's like, well, shit, how am I getting to the hospital? Flipped open the Uber app. Called an Uber to the hospital, literally crawled into it
And he's just like, hospital? And then he looked back at me, and I'm just like, I just went, ugh. And he's just like, okay, right to the hospital. And I kind of like rolled out and drug in there. But I can't imagine what some, you know, what you might see some nights or some people. It's like, are you okay? Are you safe?
So many things happen.
Have you done late night shifts?
I try not to. No. I've been out, you know, like 9 o'clock, 9:30, and it just dramatically starts drop. Like the wasted levels get too much
too
for
intense.
Me. I'm yeah. too over like sensitive to sit there and like they're having like people are trying to pile in or just the different. It's the shift in mentality that I'm not going to do it anymore in my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I just stay away from that in general, and to pick people up, it hasn't. You know, they should be able to go out and have fun, and that's what they're doing. But
and it's good lifts around for that sort of thing too. And some people don't seem to mind like picking up drunk people, but I would be the same way where it's like, I don't want to deal with that.
There's so many people out driving. Those are like the peak hours where Lyft gives you incentives to be out there. And then there's twice as many drivers. There's twice as many people taking Lyft.
Yeah.
This town Lyft is, it's gigantic here. Yeah. I don't think the amount of people who use that app is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's great.
And how many drivers are out there and how many people are using it constantly. It's the city is moving.
Yeah. One thing I just read just here in the last few days was they said that it's actually causing more congestion.
It is.
Because people aren't using public transportation now as much. And then there's more drivers on the road.
And every Lyft driver, there's nowhere to really pull over. And the passengers don't get when you get the pickup, especially downtown.
Yeah.
And this is another, like, the breakdown in, like, people. You're like, I'm right here.
Yeah.
And they don't realize. There's, like, nowhere to park. And they'll be like, nope, come get me. And then they'll call you and you can see them.
Sure.
And you're like, I'm here. And they're like, yeah, we're just up the road. And you're like, you have to come to me. Like, I need it. You have to get in the car here. Because there's no. I'm not going to put the hazards on and just block traffic.
Right.
There's nowhere
That's
to do
ridiculous.
It. And people get very frustrated and are like, oh, I guess you couldn't have, you know, you're like, don't. It's like, and you can't like fix the world by just being like, look, you don't understand. Unless you drove for Lyft, you wouldn't understand how difficult it is.
You're like, bro, I still have to obey traffic laws.
Like, we don't, but nobody does. All the other Lyft drivers are just like hazards. People are like double parked.
I do that. You saw it down here where I have that sidewalk down there. I'm like, oh yeah, just pull in the sidewalk and park there for a minute. Just park. They're like in the sidewalk. I'm like, yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
They're like, okay.
Safe at least.
Yeah, I guess. I'm shit. Just standing down here, letting you in the garage. Speaking of safe and drivers, Jesus, man, I can't even imagine driving late at night. It's in the middle of the day right now, and some lady just flying through that intersection without stopping.
Oh yeah,
it's just putting more cars in the road. I don't know.
I've been meeting a lot of people. I've been able to like make connections with interesting folks and like that are in Portland to get them on like more podcasts.
Oh,
like,
that's cool.
What do you do? Like, can you just always talking with people?
Yeah,
you know.
That's why I like riding quite a bit. It's just you just get to talk to cool people.
Holy shit, it's a trip.
I bet you it's a trip, though.
I like it, though. It's been pretty cool, because... So here's an idea.
Okay.
I want to make the same sort of app for waiters. For all these bars in Portland that you have to go to the bar to get a drink, and then you sit down, and you want food, and you have to get up, get a number, sit back down... Or even when you have to, you know, you have to get the number first before you get your table. Like the etiquette is like, get in line, get your number after your order, and then you can sit down and then you can go pick up your food.
Yeah.
After that, there's no more service. So if you had like waiters who had the Lyft or the waiter app, you can just hang out in your favorite bar and just wait till a table's like, opens it up and it's like, I want another beer. Then you're like, pick up the order.
Just like, I'll go get that for you. Yeah. Accept.
Yeah. And then you go get the order and it pays through the app and then you just deliver the beer and you're like, and you could be dressed up. Imagine the debutantes that would
fucking rad,
would
man.
Be like bow tie, just at like a dive bar, like come get you another one. Be like, you could be a professional waiter anywhere.
Yeah, well, I wonder how much of that sort of shit's going to keep happening.
It has
that
to.
Sharing economy, just that kind of independent contractor type economy,
right? Because then you can work whenever you want. That's the beauty of it. You can be like, I'm going out and working right now.
Well, it seems like we're gonna move through this phase really quickly to automation. It's like we're going to, you know, automated cars. Eventually, that'll reduce cars on the road if they're just all automated.
Yep.
Right? Then that's going to change. How much is that going to change? You know, less if technically, I mean, let's say automated cars work. Less traffic accidents. less police because of that, maybe less blah blah blah, and you can see where that can go.
Well, I think it leans us more towards being a, like, more of a hive mind society. Rather, that's what makes things more efficient. Like, look at bees and look at things that are hive mind, that they all do their thing.
Yeah.
If automated cars and transportation was happening, at least we'd all be, you can see, okay, there's a car coming.
Yeah.
You may either made this one or you made that one, but they'd probably just be like constant lifts, like
constant doing
their loops. And they probably would have their own little routes depending on the algorithm where people are going most. And then they just shift spots and they're like, boom, boom. And you can always just hop in one.
Which is both convenient and really weird sounding.
So weird. Yeah, what's going to change to make that be obsolete? And then the next thing you know, it's... Have you seen those new planes they have for flying in between islands? It has this wing. It looks just like a boat plane, you know, one that can land on water. But the wings are more of a W. Mm-hmm. Basically, it looks like a plane right in the middle of a W. I guess it would be an upside down W, like this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And then... They're thick bladed wings, and they're tilted a little bit, like when you see a goose come down to land, and it's like, or a swan when it's landing, and it's just tilted up just a little bit up so it catches that pocket of wind, and they're like soft little landing. The plane's built like that, and it only goes 20 feet above the water at the most.
Yeah.
But once it gets going, it's just like pushing the air and just gets lift. But they're just like air, like a little air pocket they're riding on.
That's weird.
And they're trying to get them for like in between Hawaii and stuff, and like do like island to island where they never go. They can clear big waves and shit.
Yeah.
But there was a company that just made these things. I saw the video and it looked like it was like so smooth, like Star Wars-y. Yeah. Just like, like right above the water. Fucking cool.
We're getting there. We're going to see some crazy shit in the next 50 years.
I know. I'm so stoked. I hope I make it to like 99, 100, 190.
Both stoked and terrified.
It's like,
oh man.
Yeah, what about that too? Like pushing the people living longer. That shit's
real.
Supposedly there's a flu pill in Japan they just released that cures the flu in a day, 24 hours, if you have like the fucking 5-day flu that you got.
Japanese got everything figured out, man.
And they're like, America's like, nope, we can't have that stuff. It works.
That works.
Works way too fast.
What are we going to do with all this profit from this medicine and stuff that we have?
All these other pills.
Yeah.
Shit.
Dude, I was just thinking about driving and all this stuff. When did you start driving? Like as a kid? How old were you?
16.
So you were legitimate at 16, you started driving.
Well, that's when I had my legal permit to drive.
Legal permit.
Yeah.
So.
And I had probably 12.
Yeah,
12 or 13 was driving car, like a pickup truck. I was, my father gave me lessons, like would, you know, bring me out to like a big ass parking lot.
Yeah.
And just be like, all right, like try to go as far as you can, like with the gear shift, like manual shift.
Yeah.
I was natural. It was pretty easy.
He just took you out and he's like, hey man.
Yeah.
Let's go drive.
And we always did the sitting on his lap steering, you know, that was super exciting.
Yeah. Probably when you were younger, even
way
younger.
And I wasn't really steering, you know, we just sitting
me
there.
Me too. Yeah.
I thought like I was steering, but
how fucking dangerous is that?
I'm going to do that. My kid, I turned out all right.
Yeah, no, me too.
But they don't let you it's like, you have to have a car seat now. You have to have all that shit. They're no kid.
I mean, legit, it was probably pretty dangerous to have me sitting in his lap, but.
Oh, yeah.
But now you're not.
That car we had, too, only had, like, the lap belt. There was no shoulder strap.
What was the car?
We had, it was a Buick, like, Wagoneer. Yeah. Like, the straight up
just
National Lampoon's car.
Just a big old piece of steel. Just a big old thick piece of steel.
Long ass nose on it. Yeah. You can sit in the back seat, face the rear.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
So you could sit in it.
I remember those,
and totally just flick people off downtown. That's all we would do, is wave at cars would pull up in traffic, and we'd be like, wave, and they'd wave, and then we'd be like, fuck you. Fuck you. And they'd be like, hey. One guy came up and told, like, got out of the car and walked up to our parents, and we're like, your son's just flicked me off. My dad was like, I'll deal with that. Don't worry. Thanks for telling me.
High fives later.
He was like, let's not flick people off.
Let's keep that on the low.
But who cares? He didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you always getting into kind of stuff like that with your dad, whether or not you're going out and driving with him and always doing stuff like that with him as a kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We had a pretty cool time in that same range, like 8 to 12, 8 to 13.
Mm-hmm.
Where my oldest cousin Scott came to live with us. So it's my dad's oldest brother, his oldest son. And you know, I think my dad's maybe at the time, 25, 26,
yeah.
you know, my cousin Scott was like 20 'cause my dad's older brother was way older. So they were almost the same age, you know, my dad and my cousin. And he did something like to get kicked out of the house or something. Was like, oh, I'm moving in with Uncle Ed, you know? So he was living with us and he was a huge dude. He was your typical, he was like Hagrid.
Yeah.
You know, my cousin Scott.
Oh my God.
He was just like a big ass fucking guy. And, we'd always do fun shit with him. Like if it wasn't my dad and Scott, you know, it was like Scott would take us out. Yeah. So we always had sort of like a bigger, older second dad around, yeah. you know, but he was rough. He really did like the, he was rough and tumble cousin, yeah. you know, pushing you down, holding you down, tripping on, you know, like playing rough games,
sure.
you know,
sure.
fireworks and shit, blowing up like army men, you know, like taking, buying us firecrackers and then like setting up a whole war zone and being like, psh, 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 like blowing up like a whole
of course
thing and being like, yeah, that's, and then be like, now what? Like, I don't know.
Let's go blow some more shit.
Just
up.
Leave the plastic blowing up guys there. I remember years later, you know, you'd be like, oh, there's another one, like another bazooka
that's
dude.
That's funny, digging them out.
Yeah, there's just, that's after the war. We just left them there. It's like, that was the playing, the battlefield.
Oh my God.
Scott, him and my dad would get wasted drunk and just next thing you know, it'd be like,
oh, just
the gorillas in the backyard.
Just gorillas like, wrestling.
Yeah, I'd be like, what did you say? And then my dad'd be like, I'm going to show you
just
what, like,
full blown, yeah. just man war masculinity.
My dad was always trying to get challenged by Scott because Scott was bigger and yeah. be like, I'm going to take you out. But my dad, he was, I don't know if I told you this when we spoke last time, he was a heavyweight wrestler.
No.
Yeah. So he was,
remember we talked about wrestling a little bit and we'll get into that, but,
yeah.
Yeah. Go on. I didn't know he was a heavyweight.
He was like, yeah, heavyweight all through high school and then went on to wrestle at the University of Iowa.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The big program there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was like their heavyweight wrestler.
Oh my God.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that sort of sucked growing up.
Cause just, was he just always wanting to wrestle and shit?
He always would do shit. Like he had this, like he was gentle giant because he was so strong, you know? Yeah. But the way he would talk to you and sort of try to manipulate you into doing what he wanted you to do, you know, whether it was whatever chores to schoolwork, you know, to practice whatever you're doing, music or basketball or get your shit done.
Yeah.
He'd always just give you the, come here. And I'd be like, 1 minute. Like I'd always sit there and be like,
yeah.
And I think some of my panic attack shit comes from being like prepping myself behind the door and be like,
what's coming? What's coming?
How am I going to get out of this? Like, what's the right attempt? And be like, I'd have to settle myself because you couldn't show any weakness in the sense of if he saw something, he would exploit it. You know, if you were like already upset at something, he'd be like, oh, here it is. Like, God, you know, so he'd walk over and be like, what I want you to do is this and that. And I'd be like, yep, yep, yep. Okay. Totally try to agree and like walk away. And then he just like grab my ankle and like my ankles are so skinny and you know, I'm like a small dude. And he would just like, his whole hand would fit around my ankle and he would just hold, like he'd be laying on the ground, stretching out and then just like get your foot. And you'd be like, oh, okay. And then you had to do like the quicksand routine. Cause the more you moved, you know, if you pulled, he would rope you in. You had to sort of sit and like talk your way out of it and be like, what else should I do? You know, like obviously because of that signal, like there was more to what we still hadn't got it. He didn't know that I had understood what he meant yet. You know, he needed me to really confirm it. Yeah. This is my figuring this out years later. You know,
how old are you this time?
This has started, you know, like the wrestling was always, you know, getting tossed and tumbled around and trying to like, you know, I can remember that as young as I can remember him putting me on my back. I get
just
up
with what intention? Just
like put me back on my back.
Just for thinking it's fun.
I think it was a whole in the aspect of, he was such a wrestler and a grappler. And it's basically, it's like calisthenics. Like I wouldn't have been as fit as a young kid as I was, or so good at sports because I was sitting up and then he'd put me back down and I'd struggle, get back up. And then he'd like roll me over and like put me on my back. And you're basically doing sit-ups and being like, oop, just little wrestling battles, you know?
Yeah. That's kind of how, I guess, he was intimate then, like showed love and just like beating the hell out of you. And it, not like, not in an abusive way, but just like,
just basically like jujitsu, just taking you down, like slowly, like making, like bringing to the ground.
Yeah.
But there was a ton of time where he'd sit and like rub his like beard, like his stubble, like on your chest and stuff, and it would like tickle her. And yeah. You'd be like, ah.
Yeah.
But it was always eye to eye, like, hey, I love you. You're good. Get up. You got this. You know, like sort of test you emotionally, physically at the same time, and then let you. He always would let you go. He was very good at like teacher in that way.
So how are you experiencing that then? Are you experiencing that as like, Jesus, Dad, like let up, or you, it's fun at the time, or is it like, why are you doing
No, not fun,
not
at,
fun
all.
At all.
A total like practice stuff. No, you knew it was coming, you know,
because
it built my sense of humor. It built my like ability to like communicate verbally.
I was going
to
say, because I'm sure when it first starts happening, you're that young, you don't really have a great ability to communicate your feelings or even know what's going on sometimes. So,
well, I think the way I dealt with it is I would do that to like my classmates.
Oh, okay.
So I basically like turn that into like, if there was ever something going on with like somebody else, or there was like not so much as a confrontational thing, but with my buddies, I would get all chummy with them and like totally grab them and just take them down and hold them down. They'd be like, dude, let me go. And I'd be like, gotcha. Who's the boss?
It's interesting how boys seem to do that though. They kind of, you know, in a way, you were probably loving your friends like that.
Yeah.
It's a way, isn't that what friends do? You know, but you got it from Dad, but it's like, well, yeah, but you probably shouldn't be beating the hell out of your friends.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
So funny. And then how it translated to my younger brother, where he was just so much smaller that he wasn't really like an overpowering thing, because my dad could overpower me and just physically like control the situation. And my brother was significantly smaller at the time. Mm. So he didn't have any tact, because he was going through the same lessons. So he didn't have the patience or the...
He just got pissed.
He just would turn and be like, ah! And you turn and he'd be like, and just like hit you with something and be like, ah! He would quick attack and run.
Didn't like it as much.
Yeah. He had a totally different game plan, because he couldn't get caught. So he had to grab, you know, do some... He was very jabby.
Yeah.
Very quick. He would throw things, fight from a distance. He was the next generation, like the modification of like, okay. But yeah, it was all good. It was super fun, because once I was able to physically challenge him as an adult, like going into high school and throughout high school, that was a whole other different like realm. Like that was like graduating into, I still couldn't dominate the situation, you know, if we were like fooling around, if you grab me, and we're just like sort of tussling a little bit, which leads me into this greeting that these guys do over at the taxi drivers that sit at the parking lot.
Yeah.
They all do this greeting. I got to find out where they're from, but they shake hands and then they like sort of put their feet together and then their shoulders together. It's like a little balancing sort of like thing. And then they sort of push back and forth until the other one sort of loses his balance. And it's like how they say hello. And then they all do that to each other. And it's like, and some people aren't into it and they just like touch shoulders and walk away.
Whatever.
They're like, it's like a weak high five or something. Yeah. But the dudes that really do it, and they're sometimes complete strangers. And it's like,
so odd.
It comes from somewhere. I want to find out where it is. I got to look that up, like the shoulder push greeting.
Well, you want, it must be some sort of just, you know, like different groups have their own little things.
Yeah.
So I, you know, might see baseball players do certain little handshakes and stuff.
Yeah.
So I imagine that's some of it. You just kind of, your initiation into the group.
But you think it must tie into some sort of like overpowering or like dominant thing, or who does the, like who's, how much are you going to push till you're like, okay, I recede, or you like, I don't think you should maybe, you're like, it's
guys
my
seem
turn.
To like that, right?
Right.
Guys
push and
seem
pull.
To, yep. A little upper hand. Who's got the upper hand?
Yeah. And then to be like, I win. Hey, no hard feelings.
Yeah.
And that stems from a long, I'm so glad I'm having a girl.
Oh my God.
I'm so glad.
Dude, I'm so stoked for you.
But I think I might do the same thing with her. Like I can totally see myself being like, hey, learn how to control your body. Like there's no way I'm not going to do that for sure.
What do you think you'll do different from what your parents or what your dad did?
I definitely won't do the chin and the chest rub.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I like that though. It's so funny. I loved when he did that and I hated it. It hurt.
Yeah.
It's just like a weird, this spot right here, right below
your
Adam's apple.
Yep.
That's a sensitive spot. I mean, I definitely will teach her that. That's a spot to go after if you're in a close quarter.
Sure.
Like if you get right in here,
yeah.
Even if you just put your hand on somebody right there, you're like, oh
yeah,
it's such a weak spot.
Yeah.
So stuff like that.
It sounds like, you know, from what you've told me too, you had a good relationship with your dad.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like it's kind of cool for you to hear like, oh, he kind of wrestled around and kind of threw you around a bit, but you seem to really take it as like a positive in a way, or you turned it into a positive.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're probably wrestling with your friends at school and stuff, which, you know, can cause other problems if it goes too far. But how were you able to kind of take that as a positive then? How were you kind of, some kids, you know, could just be just harbor anger towards their dads or just turn into angry kids because of that.
Well, I think it was always communicated that it was in good sportsmanship.
Yeah.
Really. And there was no biting, no eye gouging. There was no losing your temper.
Oh, so there were rules. Hey. There were rules.
Oh, you definitely couldn't. Because there was definitely, when I was way younger, I would lose my temper and like lash out. And it was a, hey, that's not what this is. That's not how you deal with, you know. Because overstretching your emotions and losing yourself in your emotions in that situation leaves you way more vulnerable than staying collected and staying in control, staying right there with what's happening and not being like trying to throw like a wild punch or try to just be like savage. Cause A, you're either going to burn yourself out. And that was a couple lessons that I learned, like having those kids, cause all kids have those spaz out moments too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you see your kids going through this energy where they're like wound up and they need to release that energy. And I think one way he was doing that was making me struggle through that. And I would lose my cool and I couldn't get out. Like I would be like held down and he would just be like, get out, get out, get out. And I'll never forget the time he did this wrist control game. And it's just like from all wrestlers.
Yes. Wrestlers, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That wrist control. And there's a really slight thing. You don't even have to spend any energy, but you just turn your wrist
flick
to counter it.
Yep.
And then that's the game. It's like pushing and pulling. And that's like a whole, that's way more advanced. But I'll never forget the time when I got out of the wrist control when I was big enough in high school and he had me. And up until then, I was never able to get out, but I was now strong enough to, I broke his grip.
Yeah.
And, he sort of was like,
oh, fucking celebrate.
He was like stoked. And I was just like,
first
around
time.
The corner, like I just took off running. I was just like,
fuck you, dad.
Like I escaped. I'm like, saves me so much more time than have to talk my way out of this. It was pretty cool.
Did he, this is fascinating. Like it's fascinating that he, like, this is how you guys shared love. There were kind of established rules around it. You kind of knew what was going on. Did he also encourage you to be like, talk about how you feel growing up? Just like, you know, how's it going, buddy?
Or, oh, yeah.
You know, to share feelings, I guess, verbally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The whole time. And that process was happening constantly.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was before and after, like, and you know, it wasn't every interaction that this wrestling was going on, you know?
Yeah.
There was a lot of, conversation. This is where I learned to converse like this, just to sit down and be like, hey, what'd you learn today? And that was like, there's been this family motto for as long as it goes back to my grandfather, it probably goes back to his grandfather. But what did you learn today?
Yeah.
Every day you'd be asked that. There would be a time where we'd sit down and we are more, and this is something I hope that we get into as our family, like little node starts is the dinner at the same time. And like doing that, like really cool. You're coming home to eat. You're always eating dinner. You know, it's these days, it's way more difficult, I think, to live that life. You know, there's so much more distractions, but we had that dinner every night. You'd come home, you know, we'd sit, we'd cook, everybody would cook together and then you'd sit down and eat. And then after dinner, there was either like that TV time or you had just hang out,
but it was together.
It was all together.
Yeah.
In the house. We were all there, you know? And you would ask us, each one of us kids every day, what did you learn today? And that's what our grandfather would say. But our grandfather would say it. The first time I heard it, we were running my grandfather's front yard and he's like old neighborhood, uneven bricks or the uneven sidewalk, you know, where the tree grew and there's like the root. And we like, that would be what we used to bust off with our BMX bikes and be like off the curb, you know, cause it's like a super jump.
Yeah.
The whole sidewalk was like that because it's an old neighborhood in Kearney, New Jersey. And I was running, tripped both knees, like skinned both my knees right in front of my grandfather and like rolled over. Before I can even cry, I just looked and they're like just starting to bleed.
Yeah.
And he just said, what'd you learn today? And like that's what after you got hurt or something like that, you slam your finger in the door. What'd you learn today?
There's a lesson there to learn, boy.
Every day. And there was always something after you fucked up. You
know? Of course.
And then my dad sort of modified that to what did you go after today? Like, what did you go to learn today? Like, what did you learn anything? A lot of days it always brought that attention up to be like, I didn't learn anything today. You know, I'd be like, I didn't learn anything.
What a valuable skill to teach a young boy though, too, or just young child is just like, let's reflect on your day. And what did you learn? You didn't learn anything. Well, were you paying attention to the day?
Right.
You know, because there's usually always something to learn.
Oh, there always is. Yeah, and it didn't have to be like a major. It didn't have to be like math. It wasn't necessarily based around my, you know, I'd be like, I know Jenna Mendez doesn't like me.
Yeah.
Like, that's right. What I learned today. She definitely doesn't like me. Like, oh. But, you know, and that was enough. It was just like, shit, well, now you know.
Well, it's interesting. You have an interesting mix of of kind of getting the shit kicked out of you and being able to kind of like be sensitive. And I've been thinking, like, how do we, you know, you're going to be a parent here pretty soon. Mm-hmm. Not to a young boy, but with young boys, it's like, how do we let them be boys? How do we let them be little monsters that they are? But how do we also make sensitive boys?
Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, you seem to, I mean, like,
raise girls.
Raise you, just forget the boys. Nope. Just pass.
If you want a sensitive boy, raise a girl.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you pulled up today, and you know, the first time I'll get in the first time we met here pretty soon. But like, you pull up today, you get out, and it's just a big old hug. And even talking with you now, you're telling me, yeah, you know, raised by a wrestler and stuff like that. And I'm like, I wouldn't even tell, just because you're just such a sweet guy, and you're so, you know, you just have this warmth to you. You would never know.
Yeah.
And so, how, you know, what is it? What is it about that?
Well, I think that it comes from that. It comes from maybe my comfort in, I'm not threatened by you in any way. Yeah. Not that I would be, you know, or should be, but there's gotta be a correlation to people that don't have that comfort with themselves. Courtney and I were talking this on the way out to the Couve about how she likes people, but she hates people.
Yeah.
You know, and we sort of got discussing it with, like, I have passengers and I see like 16 to 17 different kinds of people, like complete strangers every day. You know, I never have the same ride twice.
Yep.
It's all new people. And I'm convinced that it isn't, I feel like as a group, we're at all assholes. Humans at some level we're all fucking assholes.
Sure.
At some point in time, even at our best of times, we're an asshole to somebody somewhere. It's like inevitable.
Yeah.
But that's just situational, how we interact, because you're dealing with strangers. It's just circumstantial to when you cross paths, I think, when you're like, look at that fucking asshole.
Right.
You know, even though you can look at some people and be like, what if that fucking jerk off, you know?
Yeah.
And then you also have friends that go past that initial just interacting, and you can relate to something, so you're friends. But I think it's not that you don't, it's a combination of both. I think it's that you cannot like somebody, or when I project my happy attitude to somebody that sits in the back seat every time, I've narrowed it down to like a couple different vocal tones or ways to say hello. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't matter who sits in the back seat, because I make them not think I'm the stranger.
Yeah.
And then it's immediately like a friendship.
Sure.
If the bond connects, and it's less intimidating, and they're put at ease, so they're not on guard. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm so conscious of being on guard or being relaxed that I know that I'm calm, I'm fine no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. So I know how to sort of manifest that, or at least project that to, like, so people glom onto that energy rather than being fearful. Cause when you get like dudes that are insecure or projecting like masculinity, or projecting like, hey, well, that doesn't bother me, whatever. Then it starts, that's where all that tension rises, because you start, even if you challenge them, they're like, then it gets more tension. And you're like, hey, what the, and you're like, here we go. It's just, they're not set themselves in order to set the stage for like any kind of interaction.
Sure.
And then there's so many fucking people in the world that everything's like, it's just ones and zeros, you know.
Yeah.
It's like boom, 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 sure, boom. You never know, and sort of things probably just flow that way in society, whatever's happening out there. But to answer your question, I think that's that being.
Well, that's your dad pinning you down and saying, stay calm, figure out how to get out of this.
Yeah.
And what you just said, you know, you're kind of conscious of those energies and conscious to stay calm when people get in cars.
Yeah.
But I don't think that happens with a lot of parents or a lot of dads, if they roughhouse them with their son, you know what I mean? They're not teaching lessons while they're doing.
No. There's a lot of abuse. There's a lot of like, just striking to be like, see that?
Yeah.
That's what you get. Not explaining why you got that or why you dropped your guard in order to get.
Right.
Cause you shouldn't get hit. That's the lesson too. You shouldn't get punched. You should be ready for a punch. You should be able to be like, whoa, I'm out of here.
Right.
Even sucker punches. Like, what are you standing so close for. Mm-hmm. There's all it's so complex. There's so many different cues and like people's, you know, the way people are standing. Or I think he was definitely a warrior. He would sit on me for some days though. He would just sit, just both arms mm-hmm. under. You know, he was just sitting there watching TV. Mm-hmm. Eating popcorn, and he'd like grab me, and like I'd be like no, yeah. and then like roll over, and then he would just like be on my arms and my legs, and your reaction would be to try to escape, but I had I would just lay there and just watch what he was watching, and just be like, give me popcorn, you know, like move my mouth, and be like, huh, and he'd be like, you gonna get up? And I'm like, I'm good, you know, I had to just patience and be like, I'm good, I'm good, what are you doing? Until he was like bored and be like, all right, get up. I'd be like, good job. Maybe tomorrow we'll just be like, whew, fucking get out of there.
That's interesting. So as you move, I'm just imagining that whole scenario in my head. It looks funny. Uh-huh. As you move into a young man, did you ever have kind of the backlash towards dad? The, hey, it's, you know, the young bull coming up ready to take the,
no, never.
Why do you think not? Like I was always, for example, I was always really close with my dad growing up, but it was very much kind of a father-son relationship. And, you know, throughout high school, I think it was my freshman year, he moved to Hawaii for a lady. And like, I'm a little Oregon Coast boy, and I was like, well, all right, dad. Like I always wanted him to be super happy. So I wasn't really upset at the time. Whereas everyone else is probably looking at it like, Jesus, you just kind of left your kids there to go for this lady, but I'm just like, oh, he's happy. Yeah. But you know, I tried to move out there with him, miss my friends, move back, but it took me, went through high school and then got to community college and something happened. And I just was like, fuck you, man. And I just stopped talking to him.
Interesting.
Like for, I mean, like 2 months, nothing. Just like burned it down.
And he's in Hawaii still.
He was in Hawaii and then Oakland, California eventually.
Okay.
But I was just like, and it wasn't like I was challenging him thing. I'm just like, I'm done with you for a while.
Yeah. Why do you think that was? What do you think it definitely came from within you, right?
Yeah. I think it was probably, I was harboring some anger.
Yeah.
Some anger that, you know, you weren't around, you weren't at my cross country meets to say, hey, good job. You weren't, you know, you just weren't there. You did your best to be there verbally and whatnot. And, but you weren't there. So, you know, I had to become a young man quite early. It's like grateful for my aunt and everything to house me and stuff, but there wasn't a lot of personal validation going on there. There wasn't a lot of, let me show you how to be a young man. You know, I was being modeled. I was watching my uncle, who was just kind of not the best model for, I don't think, to what a man should be to his family. He worked hard, but he was kind of an ass. So, you know, I was kind of on my own there emotionally. So I think eventually the backlash caught.
And what age is this?
My main like resistance back to my dad came at like 18, 19.
Okay,
so first year in like community college where I'm just like, I was kind of a little depressed, like, you know, most kids to kind of depressed and
those are fucked up years too.
Fucked up years, man. Yeah. Like especially as a young man, and you're, you know, trying to like, I was overly focused on school and then you're like, oh, what's going on over there with those girls? You know what I mean? So you've got a lot going on and it's kind of a time where you need dad.
Well, I think, what your, where your anger or whatever that feeling was coming from was seeing, you were learning what it was to do it on your own and seeing in him that he wasn't doing it. It's this weird, we have such a weird dynamic of like when we project our fear onto others because what you don't want to see. I have this thing with people who are like dirty.
Yeah.
Like I'm like a real like tidy, needy, neat, like probably to the point of OCD or something's probably also wrong with me. You know, like I might have either mild flashes of being bipolar or schizophrenic or something.
Yeah.
There's something, you know, it's like your brain is so fucking delicate. I'm either schizophrenic or a genius, you know, or both at the same time.
You're on some spectrum of some kind.
Jesus Christ. Don't take any YouTube tests, by the way. I recommend it to your
listeners. My God, down that rabbit hole.
Stop taking those tests because you're going to be like, I am crazy.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what we do is like, we don't like that in ourselves and it just pisses us off. Cause we're like, how are you so fucking dirty? Like, just how are you not organized?
Right.
And that's what was probably what was happening with you. Is like, we're hoping that he would know to do that, and he didn't. And even you knew, because you were living it and being like, man, I really wish he was, you know, at the track meet.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's something very special, or I know it's something very special I have my dad with being, he was never not there.
Yeah.
I mean, every basketball game, every football game, every baseball game, I tried to like, oh, and when he made me wrestle, there was like a whole podcast of when I was forced, when I really liked basketball, but because of some, I don't know what I did. I didn't win a bet. And the bet was to, I think it was to do, it was basketball summer league, and we were supposed to win the whole league. We were supposed to like finish first in the summer league basketball tournament, and then I could pick whether I wanted to wrestle or play basketball again the next season.
Yeah.
And this is like seventh grade. And we didn't win, so I didn't have a choice. I had to wrestle, and they coincided, so it was basketball and wrestling, so I had to take a year off of basketball. Fuck, man, that shit sucked.
Yeah.
Because I was up to the challenge, but I was like, here we go. I'm going to have to now do something that I'm so confident and like okay with doing with my dad and my brother.
Mm-hmm.
But now like going up against a complete stranger that had, you know, I don't even know. We're just both out there to do some sort of like to pin each other or something. It was a different ball game. It was a competition rather than a love communication. You know, and like when you're face to face with some other dude and they grab your arm and you're like, ow, ow, ow. Yeah. And they're like, are you okay? And like, they're like, what's wrong with you? Like trying to wrestle me. Yeah. And I'm like trying to be all shady and like, okay, wait, hold on. Yeah. Like using my words and being like, wait, like I would confuse a lot of my attackers. Cause I'd be like, wait, hold on. And they'd stand up and like, look at the ref and be like, should we go? And I'd be like, just trying to get more seconds off the clock. You're like, here we go. Like, I just need to outlast.
You're just like, you're like starting out. I just want to make sure we have an open line of verbal communication here. That we're both safe.
I was so shady.
This is like, a mutual exchange of wrestling.
Cause I did not want to touch you. Like I wasn't into like, and I don't think it came from being taught like homophobia or anything like that, but it was a feeling of like, I'm not having some dude like put his balls in my face, because eventually you would end up like tossing around and you'd be like, balls. You'd be like, oh, get out of my face.
Yeah. You just didn't like it. You didn't like that.
You just do like the salmon flop. Right. You're like, get out of here. Yeah. You're like trying to get alligator rolls. You do all sorts.
You weren't fearful of it. You just didn't like it.
No, you're like sweaty other dude's balls.
And so when you're starting to, I don't like that either. Not that I've experienced that, but did you feel pressure to perform for dad athletically?
Oh yeah. I definitely did. I was always like win at no cost.
Oh, geez.
Win.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did. I won every time.
Did you?
I lost a couple, but I was fucking like convinced we could win everything.
Yeah.
You know, definitely took losses with like grain of salt. And that's the lesson learned. Like, why did you lose? What'd you learn today? Like, how did you lose that? And you're like, oh, so obvious.
Boy, that's
just don't do that again.
That's such a powerful motivator for you. Boys and young men, their dads just wanting to perform for their dad.
Yeah, it's definitely caused some issues in my adulthood.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. what issues has it caused?
Just like, maybe the striving for like the unattainable and like setting too high goals,
like overly ambitious.
Exactly.
That's an interesting one for men, because it seems like we're encouraged to be ambitious, but we're never really taught the line. We're never really taught like what that means to be ambitious. We just want to go hard. It just means go hard, and going harder is better, when that's not always the case.
No, we're not taught how to lose is the thing.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
We're not taught how to deal with like the letdown.
Sure.
You know? We're trained to, believe and set that goal and be like, yeah.
Well,
and
right. Then, we always get high fives and everything from dad when we succeed. But then when we lose, it's just kind of like,
yeah,
you don't get much.
Yeah. And you're not
there was pulled aside lesson.
To say like, what happened there? You know, there's always like, I think that's where a lot of that shame comes from. Cause you're just sitting there like, you don't know, you can't figure it out. Cause you didn't like, you failed and you're like, how did that happen?
Right.
You didn't see it cause you're in it.
Right.
You know? Whereas maybe that's where that father figure is always there to be like, this is what I saw. Like, this is what happened. Like, like keep your chin up. You just, this is all happened. He got behind you. Like, he knew something that you didn't know, or he or she. I think that's how it applies to maybe raising this girl is to just always be open to like the, how did you fail? Or like, you know, what went wrong, and turn it into like more success and be like, oh, that's success. Cause that's all it is learning and failing.
Yeah.
Failing is it basically.
And it's okay. It's okay to fail.
Yeah,
man. Now, so I'm thinking too, you know, I burn that father-son relationship down. But then, I just love the guy so much. I mean, I never hated him. And he was just the sweetest guy. But after that, we just built something that, like, incredible. We just built this amazing friendship that was even better than what we had before. And I think I got lucky that he raised me just to stay open, and he was an open dude, or that could have just fallen off the cliff. But then he became still a different type of inspiration to me. And then I started looking up to him as a man again, and I started looking at what he was doing and how he was moving through the world and wanted to emulate it in a way. So it kind of came back around, but just in a different way.
And you probably that was probably inevitable anyway.
Yeah.
There's definitely going to be a time of,
oh, sure,
whether he was slipping or you were slipping, or
we had too much in common to not come back to each other. So,
yeah.
But I mean, again, like you're saying, I definitely missed out. I definitely missed out on that even being taught ambition. I missed out on a lot of that created some anger. I think that's just common in boys, unfortunately, nowadays.
Were you guys involved in anything like extracurricular like that, as like father son style, or?
So it was interesting. He served kind of as a mom and dad in the household. It was my brother and I and him. And the thing that he was really, really good at, and that I told him this just years before he passed, was, or even up to that point when he passed, that he was really good at creating a team environment, which maybe is why when he left it hurt even more, but that it was always like, hey, let's do the dishes together, so then we can go do something together. Just, you know, go watch a movie or go do homework together or whatever, or go fuck around on the beach.
Yeah.
But it was always, let's do it together, and then let's be together so we can be together. So the positive reinforcement of doing the chore or whatever was, we get to spend time together.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, what that created in my mind was, I'm going to do this before he even gets home from work. I'm going to vacuum the house, because then we have more time together.
Right. Right. Pushing it to get to more fun shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we definitely had stuff like that where we'd go surf and stuff like that. So we were always, especially my dad and I got to get my brother on here to talk to him, because he's not me. He's like, look at me mm-hmm. and then think the opposite. If I could get him on the podcast, I would hope for a good 20 minutes.
Why is that?
He's just not an open guy.
Really?
He's just not too open. Just not too talkative.
I'll wrestle him.
So growing up, that fucker would just like to wrestle me all the time, because he was a wrestler. And he's just like, hey, Brad, you want to wrestle? I'm like, no, I don't want to wrestle. I'm a runner. I'm skinny. And you just beat the hell out of me for no reason.
How much do you think that was nature versus nurture, that you became a runner? Like, he wrestled and you were like,
Well, my dad was a runner.
Okay.
So again, like, I just wanted to do everything my dad was doing. Sure. And Brett was, he's just wide, squatty, stocky. Like, he just wanted to wrestle.
Dude, there's dudes like that.
Well, and then too, he would always do this one. He'd flex his arm and go, Brad, he'd go, hit it. Just hit it. I'm like, no, because if I hit you, you're going to fucking hit me back. He's like, no.
Oh,
no,
that's
no.
So hilarious.
Just hit it.
Where does that come from? Who
teaches? I don't. See, that's what I want to know. It's like, where did that come from in him?
Probably TV. He probably watched like Porky's and Weird Science or something.
So the rest of my family is a little bit more like masculine, like traditional masculinity, which my dad was not. My dad was very open, like spiritual. Hey, let's talk it out, man. Hey, I love you. Always saying I love you. Always hugging us. Man, I fucking love hugs.
Is that still a definition, traditional masculinity? What would be like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, now.
Yes.
I see it then, like, or just like.
Well, the traditional masculinity might tell us to tell men to be stoic, to be emotionalist, because that's what strength is, right? I mean, I'm not saying that's right.
No, yeah.
I mean, the very idea.
That was the mantra.
Yeah, that was the mantra. The very idea of this podcast is to redefine that and you know, define what modern masculinity should be or what we want it to be as men. But to me, it's like, it's those very masculine things, you know, it's like big trucks and just big machinery, working with your hands and being something, be success in sports and being ambitious, overly ambitious, maybe to a point, those things. And I'm not saying those things are my brother, but he has more of those traits, especially on the emotional level, than certainly I do.
Yeah. Suck it up.
And yeah, suck it up. The suck it up generation.
Don't be a bitch.
Yeah. Exactly.
We used to get spit if we got hurt. We'd spit on it.
Spit on it, yeah.
Spit on it. And you'd be like,
and I'm at, and
now I just spit on myself.
Yeah, and then I'm like,
any better.
And then I'm like, well, actually, that could cause a bacterial infection, and I better go get that cleaned down somewhere, and I better put a Band-Aid on that because I don't want it to get infected later.
You know, in reality.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it was interesting, I guess, seeing the contrast between my brother and I being raised by the same dad. But it's just like two, and I don't know what his experience was, because I can only tell you what mine was.
Well, people are who they are too. And this is what's so exciting about having this little girl come into our lives, is that she is going to be her own spirit. Yeah. You're your own person. She's going to be an individual person. She already is who she is going to be. And this is
how does that, now. You just think about that for a second. How does that make you feel? Like you just said, she's going to be who she's going to be. I mean, to some degree, there's certainly some nurture that will be done, but there's some definite nature that's already set up.
Oh, all set.
Yeah.
She's going to be exactly who she's going to be. The nurture.
What you do, what the world does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's up to us as parents, I really think. Yeah. You know, we can definitely provide. My goal is just to provide opportunities, make them as easy as possible. Like we spoke about, I love to move to Hawaii, move to Maui with our friends and just surfboard around those people, not even push it. Just be like, we got your surfboard. Here's your skin suit. Here's your like little, what do they call that? Rash guard.
Yep.
And be like, your friends are going out. Do you want to learn? And just watch that excitement. Or even before that, as she's still young, be like surfboard familiarity,
just
something like with surfing. It's such a mother nature thing that I think any human, if you have that ability and around it, you're just gonna be like, oh, I'm just gonna go surf.
Yeah,
I think that's what draws everybody to surfing.
Well, what about that surfing community, the Maui community? Do you identify as a place that you would want to raise your daughter? Why that?
I think just the surfing. I don't know the people. I mean, for me, my experience being there, I know for a minute I would feel like, oh, I'm just the next fucking white dude that moves to move here and try to get their girl to surf.
Yeah.
But then I also can be like, I don't fucking care if anybody thinks that. Like,
yeah,
that might just be me make. I mean, sure that exists, but why does that affect me? Like, there's too many people in the world. Shouldn't. There's someone else is going to do it. You know, if not me, who?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
if not then,
and why not?
When, you know?
Yeah.
So once I got over that and just became more of that, you know, because I would just meet people and be like, how do I get involved with getting it like that to happen? And whether it's like surfing like that, I guess secretly I want to surf too. So no, it's a little selfish.
That's fair. That's fair.
It's totally,
it's like, it's not the worst thing. You're not.
No,
yeah.
I would love to be old man, like surf, learn how to longboard or just be out there in the water and just do that, share that kind of thing. Cause that's where my life is.
You're not moving to Spain to do bullfighting or you know, running with the bulls. Like I've always wanted to run with the bulls. Yeah.
And if I did, I guess
would you let her run with bulls?
I have a fun story I want to tell you about later about running with the Freds. I want to do something. It's been years we've been talking about it, but do up Williams. You know how all the cyclists after work at 5 o'clock, everyone's riding to North Portland up Williams, and there's just like a traffic jam of bicyclists.
Yeah.
So I want to get like a couple hundred people dressed up as the runners in the same suits. And then just get like fake bullhorns for the cyclist, and then just have like a running of the Freds and just run up Williams one day with like all cyclists and runners and just take over the street, you know?
You know, I would think that was weird, but we live in Portland, Oregon. Exactly. So
it could be the biggest thing to happen.
So we could probably organize that by tomorrow. I think.
We could. Somebody call. Yeah. It would catch on. It would be a yearly thing. It would probably get gigantic.
Oh,
the running of the Freds.
Because it makes no sense.
It's so dumb. It's so especially dumb. If you have like all the bikes with the bullhorns on them and stuff. You know?
Fuck, I love Portland. Just take off. So you're talking about moving to Maui with your daughter.
That's an idea. That's not set in stone yet, you know, but that's like,
but it's a
possibility.
But it's a very thoughtful thing. You know, you thought about a little bit of how to nurture this already set piece of nature that she's going to come out as.
I would like it to be as easy as possible for her in her younger years to really be young, really. And this is my idea of like what I would, cause I think this is what I wish I had.
Yeah.
You know, it's like just flipping what I didn't get and seeing if it works better.
Yeah.
Not that I had a bad childhood at all, but, I definitely didn't live in Maui. You
know? Right.
Cause I already have that vision that I can see the conversation of my, let's see what age is going to be, like 16, 17, 18, maybe that, like, the years that it gets like, uh-oh, now you have like a daughter, you know, like it's like gonna, cause your kid, hopefully not, but your kid, I think, is going to want to abandon or like fight the establishment, you know, and be like, try to test out that eventually you're going to be the enemy for whatever reason. It's stupid, but to be like, you know, I'm just sick. I can't believe I grew up on this island and I'm in Maui. Like, I just want to go to school and like focus on my education, Dad. And like, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to Yale. And you're like, well, that's your counterculture, you know, like try to set it up for living that life. And like the challenge would be like, I want to be more like, listen to me, like already like predicting my kids,
right?
Fucking future. These are just my hopes. Yeah. Who knows how it's going to go. You know? I just hope that you'd be stoked if you're like, oh, you grew up on Maui surfing. Be like, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. What's your dad do? Like, he podcasts right over there.
Yeah, he's just over there on the beach. The guy with the microphone on the beach.
He makes millions of dollars doing nothing. Next time on Puck Flip.
Yeah, for the record. Oh, you'd have to change the name.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think I'm ever going to change it.
I'm just going to keep it.
Because that was the goal originally, was to use that to get me out of Portland.
Yeah.
Just to be like, you know,
I gotcha.
You know what I mean? Like, that's why. It's like
Portland's number two podcast.
Even if you're here, you know, it's still like, fuck Portland, man.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I love it, hate it.
Yep. But
you can still be in Maui and be like, fuck Portland,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, dude.
Fuck that place. We're going back tomorrow because we're still always going to come back here. It's going to be, this is our hub.
Yeah, man. Portland's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I love it here. And at the same time, I really don't like when the homeless people piss in the foyer down there in my entranceway.
The homeless thing. Let's talk about that.
I mean, like, I have so much empathy for them. So I'm like super friendly with them and try to give them stuff every so often. But then at the same time, it's like, don't piss in my apartment building, please. It's just frustrating, man.
What do you think that, so is that nurture, nature?
Boy, well, that's first, I mean, question. It's mostly men that I see, right? I don't know what, I couldn't put a percent on it, but.
Oh, 93? 93%
men, specifically.
That would be my guess. I'd bet money on 93%.
Yeah, so I don't know what that, I mean, there's a lot going on there, right? I mean, some of them I see that are just clearly whacked out on something, like dancing in the streets, and because I run pretty early in the morning. And you just pop down Burnside, and then you start running over towards Broadway Bridge there, over to the Motor Center, and it's like that's kind of where they are. And some of them are just off in their own land, and I don't know, man. I don't know where. It's got to be both. I think some people are born susceptible to certain chemical imbalances, and then they get into something, some sort of. You know, alcohol probably is a big one. Opiates are probably a big one. And they just lose it, man. They just lose they're just susceptible to losing it.
That's a good way to put it. Because you're so far gone and you've lost it at that point.
Yeah.
And we can probably boil this all the way back to that discussion of like father, son, or expectations or goals or fighting. Being pissed at your dad or fighting the, like, cause there's probably a lot of like, fuck society, like fuck the system going on in their head where they don't get that. Like we were talking about with, I like people, I hate people and like people.
Yeah.
They're just projecting their fear is what they're projecting, and their excuses to to blame the other thing.
Yeah.
It's such a fucking mental game, man. It's all risk control.
It is. And I wonder how many...
basically risk control it brings down to.
It is. And some people are born with a higher risk. And I wonder how many of those young men just like didn't feel like they were living up to society's view of what a man is. And it just made them snap. You know? I mean, for me personally, I feel like I don't live up to that all the time. And it's frustrating. It's like, I just want to be me, but I don't snap. Obviously I'm a roof over my head. I have a steady job. I go to work, I get my work done and, you know, smoke a little cannabis here and there to calm myself down and sleep at night. But like, I can't put myself in that headspace of where I would just be like, gone, just fuck it, fuck everything. And I wonder how much of it just comes from pressures, not being able to live up to what society's probably tried to tell them to do.
If I was a homeless person, I would be like the best marketing homeless person. I would have like, my tent would be all Adidas or something.
Right?
Like I would be like, look, I would get get like the ability to advertise and just be able to get out of the, I'd be able to get out of into my own apartment from a tent. Not that I'm saying I want to make this a challenge. I hope nobody's like, let's see you prove it.
Yeah,
I'm not
prove it, bro.
This. But I bet I could if I was to say, all right, I'm just going to toss everything aside. Well, basically I have. I don't know if I told you, like my family house growing up was in a house fire when I was 19 and it burnt to the ground. We lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, I mean, I had I had a financial backup, you know? So I had cash that was to help me live, which is, I think, the saving grace. So it's, we can talk about, you know, what's the word where everybody gets the same amount of money, like a standard income or like a national income?
Communism?
No. Well, have you heard people talking about this?
Oh, yeah, yes, like, yeah, yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody's
universal income.
Universal income for people.
Communism?
Exactly. That could help. I think, like, looking at some of the problems, that could help with regulations to help people manage that money. And to when you go to get that monthly check or whatever it is, say it's $1,200 a month.
Yeah.
You have to jump through some hoops to get it.
You're not worried about eating, though, when you get that check. And that takes a lot of pressure off in other areas of your life. You know what I mean?
It just gives you the ability to get even help. Even if you have the capacity to sign up because you know that money's coming, a lot more people that are maybe lazy or like a little bit on edge would work a little harder to get into it. Just to jump through the hoops because they know now they have it. And then you can sort of capture those people and capture what their problem is. And like, what did you learn today? Like, what is it about each individual person? Like, what is it that you don't get that you keep the same thing over and over? You keep failing. Like, you can't get up. And some people are either, some people just need mental help. And that's probably, what's that percentage? 70% of those people probably need like a, is that, would that be communism or a group? Like, what would that be something that's like, to put them in like, cause what was the old, like the nut houses they used to call them, you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
Like you're going to go to the nut house.
Yeah.
Like that existed still in our day. Like they're all McMinimins now, but they were nut houses.
Right.
And now they're still nut houses cause they're fucking McMinimins. McMinimins, if you're listening, sons of bitches.
They're not a sponsor. Don't worry.
Step up the service.
Yeah, I think there's a lot going on there, right? There's substance abuse going on. There's, you know, I mean, I'm a functioning adult and I go to counseling and I imagine they need a lot of psychoanalysts. I mean, I don't know the words and stuff, but they probably need some help.
Yeah,
They need to be treated as members of society.
Right.
You know, and not as other. And I think that, you know, I don't know for you though. Oh, so when we first met, us sharing that joint with that random guy.
Oh, yeah.
He just was so warm and he just lit up.
Yeah.
He just lit up because he probably doesn't get that sort of love all the time.
No.
And it's just interesting. So, I mean, I wonder, there's just so many.
I totally forgot about that because we asked us for a cigarette, right?
Yeah. So this was a part, I wouldn't get into this now. When we first met, I think I emailed, JD gave me your email and I just emailed you. And how did you experience that email? Because I just reached out and was wanting to ask about podcasts.
Yeah. I was like stoked.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're stoked. So we met at the little, was the whiskey bar right over there?
Pope House.
Yeah, that's where we met. And then we sat down and it was like, it was just instant conversation, boom. And we were just both super comfortable. And I was thinking about this the other day, like you told me, you're like, I went home and I told my wife, I've got a new friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking, it's like some guys,
I walked in the door and was like, whoa.
Yeah. I felt the same way. And I was texting people, and this is something I don't think guys talk about a lot, but it's like how those instant bromances spark. Yeah.
And Courtney was like, look at you.
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, I did met a friend.
Bromances can just spark out of nowhere with certain people, man.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. I don't know what, but it's just not, it's funny because guys don't really talk about it that often. We're just kind of like, yeah. But then to other people, we're like, yeah.
Or you get like different, like perhaps we're just more vocal, able to say that thing without it feeling like, dude, punch well, it.
You said something earlier, like,
punch it.
Feel like
it.
You get out of the car, you hug me. It's like non-threatening. I'm a non-threat. You were a non-threat in a certain way.
Yeah.
But then we shared like this common thing, and then we thought we just were on the same wavelength.
I wonder how much the hug subconsciously, though, I'm like sizing you up.
I don't know, maybe some. Maybe.
Not that I feel like that when I'm doing
it. No, it felt like a nice warm hug.
Yeah, I'm like hippie style though. Like, yeah, I was like total, you know, like socks and Birkenstocks and shit, and just being like dirt. Like, yeah, dude, fucking total love.
But it's not all guys though. You sit down with in the same room, and it's bromance. It's some of it. You're like, I mean, I had another guy on the podcast who took me a while to figure out. Like, it was more of like a, who's this guy? You kind of stiffen up, your chest goes down a little bit, and you're like, I got to size this guy up a little bit for a while. You just kind of stand back and watch because I don't know what he's about. You just look at him. But then eventually you're, oh, he's just a warm, great guy. Love the guy.
Yeah. Walls we put up.
Yeah.
Are girls not, this is what I need to know. Are girls not taught that traditionally to, like, how are our girls raised? How do I not, I mean, the thing is, I'm glad that I'm going into this with a clean slate.
Yeah.
And I'm not like, well, this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know that's not the case with anything. Like, you have to be open for everything, but learning, like, are girls secretly taught other things?
I think they're treated differently.
Definitely treated different.
Definitely treated, and their expectations are different, right?
Right.
I mean, you weren't expected to express yourself probably as a little boy. Well, maybe you said you kind of were, talked about that, but most boys aren't, you know, express your emotions, yet girls are encouraged, it would seem to me, to be more emotional. Like, that's acceptable. The feminine energy is more emotional. It's more open. It's more caring.
But then again, from my experience so far with Courtney's nieces and my friends having children, little boys are the worst.
They're monsters.
They're little crybaby, like...
monsters.
Terrible emotional wrecks, like what you would think a girl should be. Or not that they should be, but I'm trying to say, like, they have no... they're actually what I think we think of as like, oh, you're being a girl.
Yeah.
But it's not that's not the right way to say it. Sure. It's just they're freaks. And then the girls are like, like, awesome. Oh, I'm so glad we're having a daughter. It's the best.
Right.
And people keep saying, like, when they're older, it's going to be a nightmare, but I don't, whatever. That's like, whatever happens. But boys are, they're crazy.
Well, just the minds. I mean, just this talk, this discussion is maybe honestly some of the problem, where it's like, are they monsters, or just all boys growing up are just, they're just tough. They're just tough.
Yeah, and I don't think parents know how to teach that. It's probably the structure set up that everyone's like, well, you're supposed to treat them a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's not the case.
The structure's bad.
The structure's terrible because, man, I'm glad I was raised. I think you need it to be like, you need that. You need constant. That's another main issue is you need two parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's huge.
I would say that, you know, single dad, he did everything he could, but man, I had a fucking village raising me too. And I had, while my mom wasn't around, you know, she came in and out, not in a positive way, but she was I had amazing mother figures. Okay. So it was, you know, he raised me alone, but then I had some other just amazing
women around.
I had women around, and it was still, And I struggle with this, and probably a lot of my problems come from not having a consistent mother around. But I had some amazing mothers around. But I can say for my dad, he was always very loving. And I mean hugs, good job, buddy. But I never felt like he pressured me. I never felt like he was going to treat me different. Like if I had, now just sitting here thinking about it, if I was a girl, which makes no sense in my head, but like I don't think he would have treated me any differently. I think he had one way he wanted to raise a kid, and it was with love.
Yeah.
He wasn't afraid to love me. Hugs, whatever.
Yeah.
Be goofy, be silly, all that good stuff.
Interesting.
And I wonder if that's some of it, where it's like, hey, like, yeah, we have these sweet little girls growing up who are, you know, have this great energy on them. We have these little fucking monster boys. And I think as humans, like maybe, you know, we treat them differently, but maybe we shouldn't. And just apply the same thing. And you're just going to be frustrated with that little boy until he gets past it.
Yeah. Not to say there's, it's complicated, because I think you want to be able to, at a certain, it might be a certain age group where you raise them the same. And it's almost like the same thing with like women in the military or gays in the military, or not to use military as like the platform or the equation, but you're like asking somebody that can't meet certain standards to like do the best they can to get, you know, like you get into that elite military. I am going to use the military. Like are you trying to like dumb down or like weaken your elites to like be able to like carry someone that can't physically do those things? Like,
yeah.
How do you do that with kids where you're like, it's okay to be fully feminine and fully masculine and meet in the middle, and then being able for both of those genders or sexes to do, and genders to be able to like do the eight, doing the figure eight, but to be like centered and to know all the whole spectrum of it, because without that, you just have, but I think that's the society. Society is going to outweigh, people are going to be here in the middle, all over the place.
Well, you just said something too, that it's super complicated. And to further complicate that like, when you look at masculinity and femininity, that they're more just their energies. Right. But most of the time we assign femininity or masculinity, it's a man thing, straight man thing. It's not really the case. Like I have certain feminine qualities about myself.
Sure.
And maybe one day I'm a little bit more feminine than I am the next day. But it's like, I guess how do we stay mindful that we need to let people go in and out of it and find it on their own way, instead of forcing that onto them, forcing that little boy to be super masculine, and then maybe even encouraging that frustration and anger to be how he deals with his pain.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't given a choice to, when I was pushed or when I was like set for a goal, like looking up to, you asked me if I was trying to perform for my father or meet his expectations. And within all that kindness and love and all that, I definitely was, given the choice of, well, you don't have to win, but if you don't win, just don't come home. Like it was literally like, that was like the saying. It was like, you don't have to.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, like I won't be mad if you don't win, but if you don't win, don't come home. And that like breaking it down, being like, holy shit. Like,
yeah,
I'm coming home. And you're like, well, better win.
Guess you better be winning then.
And I don't know. Like what, in my mind, I never thought of it as being fucked up. I always was just like, oh, I'll just fucking win then.
Yeah.
I'll win it.
I think you're rare.
Yeah. I didn't care. Well, and then I also lost and came home and cried.
But well, you're probably, but
there was never the threat of not having a home. You know what I mean? It was just like, those are strong words to be like, what?
That's a pretty strong fear tactic.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Do you think you would use kind of a fear tactic with your girl?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely set boundaries.
Boundaries, sure. Yeah.
How I handle them, I'm going to make mistakes. I'll already admit it. But I'm going to try the best I can to set some expectations for you. You have to. I think I have to.
Yeah.
I have to have an expectation, you know. without the intent to try to intentionally like fuck with her shit, you know, or like give her problems in the future. But without those goals, I don't think I'm really going to benefit her without like, someone has to set like, some sort of standard of what we're trying to accomplish. Like, this is what, you know, feel like you're able to do it. And yeah, I guess you have to set those stepping stones, like make it, it's all like age appropriate. And I think as you're growing, you really have to ramp it up, you know? You can't just start off with like, get up.
Yeah. You're describing something that's interesting here. There's a real nuance here too. What you're telling me, you're like, you're going to be teaching, you want to teach strength for a little girl. Like, you can do fucking anything you want to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not all girls are taught that, right? You're talking about teaching, like, it seems like this is a model that you might teach to a boy traditionally.
Sure.
Which to me, from the sounds of it, is cool. Like, if a girl wants to go into science and be a scientist or a computer engineer, great, but you better hustle.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. But I think that's kind of not been the case for many years.
Not at all. More so now, though. And I think
That's rad. That's
without
rad,
this like huge movement of like the everybody knowing the ability that you can do, it doesn't matter if you're a boy or girl.
Yeah.
And we can get into that. Like I'm going to say for as long as it's been man and woman, sometimes that math, like trying to tie it into masculinity sometimes probably our only competition are for certain men or certain relationships with women. Like you almost have to trick them, or like you have to hold them down because because let's face it, we're all as good as each other. We're all as good as our best person. So there shouldn't be any inequality, but the competition of, you know, like, there was a mass movement to like keep women like, you can't vote, like that whole shit. And it gets so complicated and convoluted, but I even know with my relationship with my wife, like they're just as, if it's masculine, or they're just as feminine, their femininity is just as strong, and it might mean other things or represent other things, but it is just as effective and just as forceful in a different way.
Well, it can be very powerful.
Right. Without the physicalness, but the ability to like control a situation and completely dominate things and be like, what am I going to fucking do? Like, I'm helpless.
Yeah.
I have no power.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a whole other conversation of like, and I think that's where this podcast will like put the highlight on how do we deal with not only ourselves, but like, that's where it's going to make a better dude to help deal with women or like mother complexes and all that stuff.
For sure. I think, you know, the two things here, like first, the powerful femininity, I don't know about for you, but for me as a guy, when it comes through strong from women, when women come like with their force, you're just like, it kind of makes me go like deer in the headlights and step back and go like, I'm listening. You're like, holy shit. It's powerful.
Yeah.
It's powerful. So it's great to see it. And then, you know, you said something else too about masculinity this is a tough one. Like what fuels a man's masculinity now? Like, why do we try to be masculine? Do you think, what's the main thing that we're validated? How are we mostly validated? I think I have an idea, but I don't know. I don't want it to put it all on. I think a lot of it comes from women, when we're validated by women in certain ways. And I don't know if that's probably not fair, and I'm probably wrong, but like, I mean, a lot of the times when you grow into adults and young men, even, you know, I'm 30 now, it's like a lot of the ways that I feel masculine is when I'm validated by women as being a man. And I don't know what to make of that.
No, I think that's it. I think that's,
it like goes from the pressures of like performing for dad to now, okay, now I'm a man. Now I need to be a man for women.
And validated through women, or validated. So where's the validation coming from?
Well, I'm saying like when I look at myself and I see, you know, how masculine am I, or am I a man, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. you know,
you're definitely a dude.
I'm biologically a man.
Mm-hmm.
But the masculinity piece that the society says you should be a man, this is what a man is. Sometimes I'm feeling like right now my biggest struggle is that it's only from the validation of women as opposed to some intrinsic, like internal.
What about gay dudes?
No, well, I'm not gay.
Yeah, but they can still validate you and be like, dude.
I guess I haven't ever been hit on by a gay dude.
No, you haven't lived.
No.
You haven't.
And I'm in
lived.
Portland, so.
I got the best compliment the other day. A guy was getting out of the lift and was like, I got to ask you how old you are. He totally was like, I was like 43. He was like, fuck, I knew it. He's like, you look young.
Yeah, dude, I'll take a compliment. I was
like, he's like, how do you do it?
Yeah.
And I was like, just tons of like lotion. Like stay, like, don't let your skin dry out. Like always be moisturizing. And he's like, really, does that work? I was like, have you ever seen your dick? That thing doesn't age.
Yeah. I mean, you're pointing
still
out
like a baby.
You're pointing out something where I have the flaw in my thinking where it should only, you know, it has to come from somewhere else. It's got to come from myself.
Yeah, it's totally coming from yourself. But I'm trying to relate that question to myself, but when I think about how you're posing it,
you're married too.
Oh, dude, and I'm validated.
So before that, how was it? Before, when you were not, you're single, was it different?
I think that's a good question.
Was the way you saw yourself as a man different than post-marriage?
I've never seen myself as more of a man as I do now, like seeing my pregnant wife and knowing what's happening and seeing what we've been able to do within the last 9 months
let's play in this space. This is interesting. Yeah,
changing from single to dating and then instantly getting engaged, married, pregnant.
How long did you date?
7 months, maybe.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. But there was definitely myself validating like this beautiful, like young, amazing person that I thought I would never meet, you know, like tying into that situation of like trying to date or who I was dating, the kind of like relationships I was in prior were all fucked, like just not healthy at all. But there definitely was some trying to validate myself through different, you know, like one kind of girl didn't work, either a look or a style or like her upbringing or nationality, you know, like just like looking at face value at girls and be like, oh, she's like into what I do and is cute. And then dating and being like, this is completely not compatible. But why did you start dating? You're like, oh, it's just either a mental thing or a more physical thing, or you both like the same music. So until I met the one, so I think I have a lot more like strength, or I'm really like held up by how strong she is and the being like, I've got this amazing relationship, you know? So that's a good question. I think I would compare myself to other dudes as well too.
Yeah.
I was into more like cycling groups, you know, it's like rode bikes with a lot more people and competed against other guys and girls. But like, it wasn't in so much of like a relationship as it was in groups or little subcultures of cyclists or.
So you found your identity.
Motorcycle
in,
people.
Well, you're
things
finding,
that I like, yeah.
Finding the identity in the communities that resonated with you.
And then that whole hierarchy of people who are better athletes than you, or people that have either more money than you, that have a nicer piece of equipment, or we talked a little bit about that with how nice, dude, someone stole my fucking running shoes.
No.
Off of our front porch. I let them dry out. They're drying. Well, I was just like, you gotta be kidding me. And that's
none
of
that
homeless
for
people, man.
Yeah. Well, I guess they needed shoes.
I wanted to do like a Cinderella, like who's a size 8.5 to all the homeless people. Be like, put your foot in here.
Put your foot
in
here, motherfucker.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
There's probably
It's interesting though what you're saying about when you met the one, you know what I mean?
I knew instantly.
Did you?
Yeah.
How did you know?
I didn't even think of it. Just was like, I saw it. It was like, fuck. No, I was just like, oh no.
I heard this phrase used on a different podcast that I was listening to on Russell Brand's podcast.
Okay.
And you meet certain people and they give you an expanded sense of your own personal potential. And I think, you know, for whatever gender you're attracted to, for me, for us women, like women have the power to do that for us.
Absolutely.
And is that, I mean, I guess I don't want to project that on you, but I feel like if I get excited about somebody I'm dating or whatever, that's what I start feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, was it more than that for you, or was it, did it open something up in you that you're not, that you didn't see before, or you, did you see something that was possible in yourself that you hadn't seen before?
That's a good question. She had no like perceivable flaws that I would eventually get annoyed at looking at. I'll be completely honest. Like I looked at her and was like, I think I like everything about her face. Like I can't see any other imperfections right now. So it's like,
it's a good start. Yeah.
There's always something that superficial where you're like, you'd be like, hey, and in my head, I'm like, I can't get past that mole. Like it's just in the weirdest spot. Like, is that a neck mole? You're like, I'll never be able, it's a deal breaker. And that's so stupid to say, but it's true. It's a complete honest.
It's human, reaction. Man. It's human.
But I have this, I cannot prove it. I have no scientific proof, but I have like future sight. I can see things. Like I'm psychic or mind melder, mind reader. I have the ability to be open enough to see exactly what you said, like the potential. I feel it, and it's more of like a visual. It's seen, it's felt, but not seen. You know what I mean? Like when we first met, I was just like, I just knew.
Yeah,
you know. And it's definitely got to be like a wavelength or some sort of unseeable vibration.
Yeah.
I'm convinced. When I saw Courtney, I was like, I literally audibly was like, oh fuck. And they were like, excuse me. And I was like, nothing.
Yeah.
And I was just like wondering how I'm going to fit. It became like a challenge. I was like, how am I going to solve this problem?
Yeah.
Like here, I knew nothing about her immediately, but my initial instinct was to, A, B, C. She's with a dude, she's single, or she's not into dudes. And then I was like calculating, like, how do I get her away from the dude?
Yeah.
If she is single, like, how do I not seem too needy at first to push her away?
Yep.
Like, create her interest. Or if she's not into me, how do I make her into me?
Yeah. You know?
Instantly, I was like, like calculating. Wasn't even paying attention to what we were doing. I was just like, she's got to be with somebody. And I'm just like wondering all these things. And it just was like, brink, 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 brink. We just worked through all those things, and it would be interesting to hear, give her voice to her side. But
first, this scenario that you just described is a very common thing, I think, for men.
Yeah.
When we're just like gaga, just struck when we see somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. We go into, okay, what path are we going down here? What's the game plan?
Right.
So go on here.
Yeah. Should I just start crying right now?
Yeah. And show just, her that? Just, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it sounds like, I mean, you kind of knew at that point, and you're like, how long do I have to, first, how am I going to date her? And then how long do I have to date her before I marry her? What's the cutoff time before I'm not creepy?
I didn't have the marry thing even. And that just sort of, it progressed really quick because we were both into each other and just like, it was like, whatever.
Just clicked right away.
We really just were enjoying each other. And then it turned into, we're like, let's fold right into society.
Yeah.
And we're both cynical enough to be like, we fucking bit like hook, line and sinker.
That's awesome.
You know, like, look at what we did. Oh, got married. And we're like, we did get married because there's a game you play with it, you know?
Sure.
There's a tax break. There's a bunch of shit that happens. It's like you fall right into all this shit. But we don't hold ourselves to that, that wedding ring or that. None of that is like, where's your ring? Or, you know, we're
those
in
are,
it.
Those are silly.
We're not leaving each other.
Those little tokens are kind of, whatever. They don't affect how much you love a person.
Yeah. And then they're great to have too. And it's also like this, like it doesn't, none of it's like when you're like, this is shit isn't real.
Yeah.
None of this like structure that we put, it just helps us better understand as a society. I think like it places us in our box. Like it puts people to be like, oh, well there's a structure that you can be like, that guy's married.
Some people like that structure.
Yeah. And then like half a dudes cheat on their way. That's like, doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Then
you're like,
mean
whatever.
Anything. Yeah.
I don't know where we're going with this. I think I got a little sidetracked, but
no, that's part of the podcast.
Yeah.
So,
totally.
So, I mean, you're moving forward through this. So we were talking about kind of pre-marriage, what you were feeling like, and then you meet this lady.
Yeah.
And we were talking about opening up your potential, you seeing more potential in yourself that kind of attracts you to these people.
Yeah.
And so what, you know, you decide to get married and then all of a sudden now you have a kid. Now you got a kid on baby on the way. So how does that change how you feel as a man or how you view yourself as a man? In what ways does it change? Cause you already said it does change.
It feels different. And I guess we'll see. We're going to, you know,
yeah,
I know that it's, I've stepped into a world of and that people have done it, you know, everybody does, has, people have kids, you know,
they're 7.5 billion people on this earth. Yeah.
They're fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
I just know that it's going to be a challenge. That I'm up for. It's like, we're going to win.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how, for me, like just settling in with the fact that we made a kid, and then it's like, it's like, okay, baby. Before being pregnant, I was never going to have a kid. I was like in that, like, I'm always going to be single. I'm never going to have kids. I'm never going to like settle down. I'll just date and just do fun things. You know, that's all I've been doing for the last 40 fucking years.
Yeah.
Just like traveling, going wherever, like doing stuff, being, you know, in relationships, but nothing of this sort of caliber.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of trust going on. I think there's a lot more of like settling into myself, whether it's not a physical place. It's not our house. I know that could change. Like, I know we could live in different places, but now there's like this crew of, it's more about the three of us now, you know, more about creating this little tribe to be like, and I almost want to bring more people in, not necessarily have more kids,
but
I want to be like, it's so cool to have that, you know,
have your community.
Yeah. To have, you have more quality stuff going on emotionally and for me and physically and just comfort wise. And I still struggle with like looking back and being like, man, before the two were here, you know, Ellie's not even born yet, but it's like Courtney and her baby in there. It was very similar to this situation where you're in right now.
Yeah.
It's like guitar
in the corner, empty fucking like place, no art on the walls.
You're just like, life is good. Like, you're just like, what do I want to do today? And like,
walk around naked. That's what I'm going to do.
And you still walk around naked. That's the best part.
Oh man.
But finding myself like in Courtney, like we're talking about, really being a part of like her and that like molding of the two souls is it. It really is. And I think it's a real easy grab for what religion is or what the concept of like marriage or unity. And like, I think religion, that man versus woman and like whatever that, it's such a fucking cheap move from whoever came up with it first. And was like, you know what we do is we take that bond and we exploit it.
Yeah, sure.
It's so easy when you look at it. And what other things like that are in our day to day that we're completely unaware that society is based around manipulating those inherent yeses, you know, because it is a yes. Like, you know, it like with her is like, yes. Now we just have this, like we're superpower now. And then we have a kid that's a trio. Now we have like, you know, the Bulls had Rodman, Pippen, and Jordan.
Yep.
Like you can't stop the triangle.
No,
you can't. There's no way around it.
That's
There's
cool.
too many options. Mathematically, if you play the triangle right, you can't beat it.
Yeah.
And if you do get beat, it's your fault.
Yeah.
You didn't do it. So you didn't do something right. You fucked it up. You didn't pass it. You didn't shoot. You didn't do something. So that's my going back to like sports analogies or like powerhouse and like trying to win. I'm always trying to win too. I'm never trying to.
So it sounds like it's really
play fair. Not that I play fair, but if the ref's not looking sometimes too, I'll definitely cheat.
Yeah. Right. You take, get the advantage.
Yeah. If I have five fouls, I'm using all fucking five of them at some point. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you kind of move from like, not that you didn't care or anything like that, but you're saying, I just don't know if I'm going to have kids. I don't know if I'll get married. To all of a sudden you find this lady.
Well, I thought it was the end. That would be the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought it would ruin everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that fear of like.
But then it happens and all of a sudden now you have this new confidence. You have this confidence of your game plan. You've got your triangle set up and you're just super confident.
It's different. It's a change. That's the change is being like, whoa, it doesn't fuck things up.
Yeah.
And that goes into someone like I think girls probably do it too. I'm sure they do. But the bullying of like, oh, you're going to get a girlfriend or not that's the example, but you know,
yeah.
Being like, oh, you're in love. You know, like that's
it's a shameful thing or something. It's weird.
Right.
It's fucking weird.
Like that comes from like dudes who think they're tough guys or something.
Yeah. They're insecure like, because they're insecure because they don't have it.
Right. That's the projection of the fear that you don't. It's complicated, man. We're not trained enough to keep it present in our mind. That yin and yang thing to be like, if you're pushing too hard, you got to know that you have to have your own safe word to be like, whoa, I'm trying way too hard.
Right, that is hard.
It's so hard because you're just like...
Because then usually once you stop and relax and forget about it, then whatever you were going for happens.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, fuck, here it is. Right. All right, then.
But you're already turning around holding up another wall.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so, I mean, this I love this confidence and just this like this energy you have about it. It's so awesome. What is something that you're still struggling with, though? Like, what are the struggling thoughts that you have right now? Be it as, you know, for your daughter or yourself as a man or anything like that.
Probably more so like failing or in the sense of like financially.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big one now. Before it was just me, Top Ramen was fine.
Yeah.
You know, or.
She's going to school, right? Was she going to
my
school?
My daughter? You better fucking believe no daughter of mine's not staying home.
Your wife.
Brad Pinky.
Your wife. Your wife.
You think you're leaving the house with that? Yeah, she's in school.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. So you were, before baby, you were the main income.
Oh, she works too.
Okay.
She's in school full time and works full time.
Okay, cool.
She's a mega star.
Yeah.
She's rocking. Yeah, team captain.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, but there's some definite added pressure on you to...
Yeah, well, I think with the money, it's just being kids cost money.
Yeah.
You know, things cost. And then seeing where that was all my money before.
Yeah.
You know, now this like $300 car seat, I'm like, that's not your, but the baby doesn't have $300. You know, you're like, wait, just can she
buy it?
Do I mean, like a Patreon account sort or something of like, for the fucking thing? Like what? Yeah. Oh, she's not born yet.
Can she drive for the Uber for me?
That's
she drive
fucking $300.
Yeah.
And everything becomes not yours anymore. Like letting go of that. And trying to be like, I can still, like, Courtney will attest. She will. We should call her. Like, I'm an asshole. Like, I'm still called out. Like, I'm still called out. Like, you're a fucking unbelievable asshole. Yeah. You know? And I know that I'm doing it, but I'm pushing up against her wall, the like woman wall.
Like an anger thing, or you just like pushing buttons?
It's just my insecurity of, like, just teasing, turning it into... not solving the problem and addressing the problem and just taking cheap shots and also retaliating, you know, because I get it too, you know. Yeah. We both do the same thing, but cheating basically.
Yeah.
I'm cheating by using personal triggers on my partner that I know are gonna not win anything for me, feel good because it's a fucking jab and it's like it makes me feel better for some reason because I'm like
just for a moment,
but it doesn't it's self-perpetuating the loss, like
you
I'm
accomplish
losing.
Nothing yeah you
no
lose.
It's actually losing but it's like it's impossible not to do at points, and that's learning to not do that anymore, and like each time being like bite your lip or take a second to think about what I want to say and how I'm going to react. So those fears of like being like not progressing or growing that way, but financially, at least right now, I'm worried about staying ahead or planning ahead or having money and looking at like life insurance or all this stuff, you know?
Yeah. That's a lot to think about.
It's too much
all at once.
It's too much.
Yeah. What ways do you kind of keep that from like freaking you out too much? Like just being like, ah!
Yeah. I really don't. I have like CBD gummies.
Yep.
Those fucking help. These squibs. Have you tried the squibs yet?
No. What's this?
It's like a little 50 milligram edible. It's called a squib. They're like blue raspberry flavored.
I've had some little gummies before.
But yeah. It's just another style.
Yeah.
The brand is squibs.
Yeah.
They're happy pills. Like a little 5 gram sliver and 2 CBD gummies.
Yeah.
And like, I'm giggling and just like, I can sleep all night and I'm like just relaxed. I've been trying to do a lot of like stretching and like core stuff and still staying
physical.
Like, yeah. I'm trying to stretch and drink and just be conscious of what I'm eating. Like total is like self preservation really. Because all this is a freak out. None of it's real. The money thing's not real. Everything will be given to you. Like, I'm a true believer that, like, the universe is going to take care of us. But within that game, like, how do you not flip the fuck out and just, like, self-sabotage it in this universe? Because nothing, like, it's all right there. It's all, you're missing opportunities constantly. If you think, like, nothing can happen, you're wrong. Because you're just not looking for opportunities left and right.
That's already an amazing gift your daughter has given you. Like, just, you know, she's going to bring stress into your life. Yeah. You know what I mean? Happiness is stress too. The struggles are stress, but she's already forcing you to be like, hey, I guess I could try to eat better. I guess I could try to exercise a little bit to deal with the stress.
And to ask too, whether it's like business or personal stuff or family relationships.
Yeah.
To start to ask, you know,
sure.
I don't feel so selfish anymore where I'm like restricting myself because I'm like, oh, well, if I ask, somebody might help me, but I might need something even more in the future.
Yeah. Have you ever struggled with asking for help?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Just that push to do it. You know, like if I can do it myself, almost like when the example you put with, instead of waiting for everybody to get there to do the dishes, I'm going to do the dishes first so we can get on to do something more fun.
Yeah.
So taking that to the extreme of trying to do every single fucking thing. So that way everything's set and to be like, okay, go. Now the fun. Yeah. Now fun.
Yeah.
And no one's having fun and there's still complaints. And it's like, well, I'm hungry. And you're like, how can it be wrong? How can this not be happy time? Everything's done. Like, you start the fun. Yeah. And then the fun doesn't start. And then I'm pissed. I'm like, well, if we can't even have fun, what's the point of doing the dishes ahead of time?
You don't want to upset their equilibrium.
Then it crumbles and you're like, wah, wah. Like then just my psyche falls apart and I'm just completely like, I'm a failure.
Yeah. That's the one I struggle with too. Sometimes asking for help.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in counseling, so I'm not like, not in that way, but like, it's more, you know, at work or in other areas where it's like, I'm just overwhelmed and I don't want to ask for help. And it's like, part of it is like, no, I want to show that I can do this. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, me puffing up my chest a little bit. I don't know, man. That's a tough one.
That is tough. But then there's the sense of, people, we can't ask for help. Therefore we struggle. We don't put out, like, say it's work or anything that we're trying to do. We don't get the best result. We don't win it per se. And then we get back to that. I'm trying to apply this to raising of kids of, do you say, it's okay, Brad. Like, we didn't need more people at that event. Like, two people's fine. And you tried your hardest. So don't worry. Like, the super it's okay. Don't, your feelings shouldn't
everyone
be
everyone gets a trophy.
Do we say, like, don't come home. Just don't come home. You know, like, where do we draw that line?
As, you know, like, the thing that, yeah.
People, I guess it's people in general.
Yeah, whatever. Dudes.
Dudes.
We have a tendency to do that to each other. But I think for me, one of the things I kind of went through teacher college. You know, we're always in teacher mode in general. Teachers are, but then so are parents, it seems like. And I don't have kids, and I'm just talking out of my ass here, but what's been affected for me in other places when somebody fucked up is to say, hey, here's some things you did well to start off with. Boom, 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 boom. But here's the parts that need improvement and here's why. And then you end it with another compliment. So you sandwich that, you sandwich the failure, for lack of a better word right now, in between the two compliments. And it really softens the blow and it makes them feel like, you know, oh, you know, yeah, I did do this well, but yeah, you know, I could have done better here. And, you know, you don't get a trophy today.
No trophy.
No trophy, but you did some things well. Here's why you're not getting a trophy. Keep doing these things well.
As opposed to you're an idiot.
As opposed to,
and what did I do wrong? Well, if you don't know what you did wrong,
yeah,
that's why you're an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking does nothing. And neither does... Hey, great job. You tried really hard. Here's a trophy. Get them next time.
Go get them, sport.
Because then now it's like, well, I failed and I still won.
Right.
You know, and that's where the tricky balance is too, is like, especially with boys, it seems like, where, you know, you got to teach boys how to lose. Because boys, I mean, just physiologically, we have more testosterone. Testosterone makes us crazy animals, cavemen. And rejection is coming for you boys, any young men listening or men my age or men before that. You're going to get rejected. and you better learn how to deal with it and not deal with it with anger. So it's just like taking that moment to be like, okay, this is what worked in that moment. Here's what didn't work.
Maybe you can get a testosterone sponsorship and hook me up.
Testosterone. Yeah, you're getting there, man.
I could.
Menopause.
My levels are normal for a 43-year-old man, but I'm like, what? How much below are they an 18-year-old man? He's like, you don't need those anymore.
You don't need that.
It could come in handy.
Yeah. You're like, sometimes I just want to run up a fucking mountain.
Non-stop.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think you're making a good point there, though. Yeah. It's like finding that balance.
What a powerful chemical that shit is, man. Can you? I mean, you remember? And I don't. That's another thing to teach young girls is we just broke through. I just had a breakthrough.
Boom.
Teaching girls about boys.
Oh, for sure.
I don't think girls have been taught like what's really going on with boys.
Like I've said this several times, middle school boys especially are just the dumbest animals there are.
Oh yeah.
And they can't help it. Just have all those hormones just into their brain. They're changing. The world is confusing. Things are happening to their bodies. It's like such a confusing time for a boy.
And that has to be the reason why women are more mature earlier, right before that time. Like girls,
well, they mature. Physiologically they mature.
Right. Yeah. And that's gotta be some sort of counterbalance to dealing with chucklehead kids
that, you know? Chuckleheads is that's such a great word, man.
It's just like, god damn it.
Yeah,
because they have that, at least that physical premise or prowess. And yep. The education system has just failed horribly.
Well, it's teaching a lot of literal like maths, you know, things like how to do this math problem, but we're not teaching kids how to live life or to deal with, you know, the inevitable failures of life. I wish we were, you know, that we need to be giving kids more playtime just to run out their puppy energy outside and to socialize in that way. You know, I remember growing up, we got a lot of playtime growing up, and we would, you know, little boys, we'd just be yelling at each other during sports and just getting pissed when we lost, but we would always figure it out together. You know, we'd always be friends afterwards. And it's like, I don't know, looking back, if I didn't have that time, I don't know how I would have dealt with that aggression or got it out.
Nope.
Did you guys have a lot of PE time and stuff growing up?
Yeah, we had gym every day and then recess.
Most kids don't now.
It's so ridiculous. It should be all recess.
Yeah. I just saw this weird, not weird, it was awesome. It was a completely open school, like no walls in this classroom. It's outside and it's in Japan. And I didn't like get into it too much, but they're saying that the results of that have been unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And then look, they have like the prisons in like certain countries where it's a come and go prison.
Yeah.
You come and serve your time as you like, and it's completely different.
That's a whole other thing. The prison system is like,
but how does it trickle down into like education, the whole school system too? Like there's little bits of each, you know, like I went to the University of Buffalo upstate in Buffalo, New York. The campus building we lived in housed 16,000 kids.
Yeah.
One building had a tunnel. Bus would drive underneath it. Cause there's so much fucking snow up there.
Yeah.
Had Pizza Huts, Taco Bells, Safeway inside of it, arcades, bars.
Everything you needed.
All on the first floor. It was like a whole mall.
Yeah.
And then 16,000 kids all dormed up in these different sections, different towers. And it was built exactly after a prison. Just no fucking like cages. It was just doors.
Yeah, that's not an exactly encouraging environment for learning.
Yeah, we were just like boxed in this room with four other dudes. Yeah. It was fun, but yeah, it's interesting. The kids, that's going back to like the surfing and having that outside stuff. Like that's what I want for LA is just
freedom.
Just be out there, surf, learn how to surf. Like what's my goal has always been like work, work, work. Or here's what I've thought. School, good job, insurance, benefits, work, save a ton of money, then like live on a beach. But that's not how it is.
That's not living.
It's get there. Like I need to, I've learned to even more so now, which has pushed me even further with my wife and now my kid, is just save your money. Yeah, I need something.
Yeah.
But get to the beach. Like go get there. Just get there.
Yeah.
And you'll find a way. Like we'll find food. Sure. We'll find money. We'll do something. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Who knows? Like, I'm not worried about what's my career going to be or how am I going to make money? Like, I'll figure it out. I know enough things. Enough things now to do something. Like,
yeah.
And I'm okay with just providing rather than putting all that pressure on. I'm going to be, plug in whatever.
Yeah.
Professional, whatever.
A little more focused on love now.
Yeah.
Like, that's all that matters.
Yeah. And look at what big companies are trying to do. Like, look at every big company. They're like, let's be a family. Like, let's force each other to love each other.
Yeah.
And be a true dysfunctional family.
Yeah. God.
You know? Come on in. Like, your part of your work requirement is to hang out with your coworkers for 5 hours a week. But people are buying it. Like, people buy into it, and then someone's making the profits. But I guess creating the family is being profit with like love and caring and emotions, and
that's the currency.
That's the currency.
Love is the currency.
Yeah,
it's interesting how that shifts over time. We focus on getting to this destination, like school, so I can get here, so I can get that job, so I can make money, so I can save money and have the insurance. And once I'm there, then everything will be great. And then you get there and you're like, oh fuck, there's no here.
No,
there's nothing here.
Never
was here. And I forgot to live all that time I was trying to get here.
What'd you learn today?
What'd I learn today? I don't know. I'm going to have to recap that later.
Yeah. Everyone, ask yourself that. Everyone who listens to this, you got it every day.
Every day.
What'd you learn today?
That's a good segue into the last few questions I have for you here.
Shoot.
I've got some questions from our female listeners that I send out some feelers and say, what do you want to hear guys talk about? Or, you know, they always have questions for guys. This is a little something called What Women Wonder. First question is why do men have such a hard time sharing feelings?
I wouldn't know.
Neither do I. Because we both are sitting here sharing how we feel about a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. We're like, it came from a young age. Like, we were talking about our dads always encouraged it.
Well, let me backpedal a little bit. I guess there are times I have a hard time sharing my feelings.
But you seem willing to share your feelings. But is that you're at a loss for words, or you're just like, sometimes you're just like, no, I don't.
I think just something in there's something that I don't want to get into it with. I guess it can't be friends. Would it be specific? I don't want to break down the question, but would it be specific to your partner? Probably. I mean, if women are asking why do men, I would say because I don't want to fucking get into it with you.
Yeah.
Because the way you brain thinks and the way you want to process it, I don't want it to just turn into you for, it's like, it's already about me. You can't help me with it because I need to figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't need it to turn into your fucking problem and then get into like, now I have two problems.
And I don't want to be told how to deal with it.
Yeah. And to just be like, now it's about you. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, and that's probably I feel like there's always going to be this like boy girl separation. There's something inherently different with this. And it does turn into like,
well, some of that too is
that's
like
where a lot of my fights come from. Where it's like, oh, now you think it's my problem, and it's always an argument.
And I think what you're saying too is really important. Like, some of the silence that we might display in that scenario with the significant other is that, and this is like no offense to women, but it's like I think you're going to try to read more into what I'm saying than what I actually say.
Absolutely.
But what I say is what I feel and what I mean. If I'm not, like, if I just say, no, I'm cool, then I'm cool. That means that, A, I don't want to talk about it, and B, it's like I'm already dealing with it, and there's just nothing more to say on it.
I'm cool. Yeah.
Which can obviously mean sometimes, like, I mean, you know, you flip that around. Now, if you say, Courtney, hey, I'm going to go watch a movie by myself, and she goes, oh, yeah, no, that sounds good. That's good. Go ahead and do that. Yeah. That might mean something different. Maybe that's not so cool.
Yeah, but then I'd probably be like, I mean, you're not putting up a fight. Maybe I should come out and stay. I'll stay.
Yeah, yeah. But my point is like, yeah, definitely. Like, sometimes it's like I don't want to say anything more because I don't want you to read into this. We're good.
Yeah, it's good. We'll deal with it.
The silence is okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate that conundrum.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, but I share too. There's also, I mean, the same thing could be said as like, why does, specifically to me, like, why does Ed continue to share?
Yeah.
Even after the fact.
Shut up, Ed.
You're just like, like, I can,
like,
just,
you keep driving the point.
Yeah, I can go and go and go and be like, but isn't it? And then, you know, to the point where like, is it okay to be this collapsed and this just, emotional? And then you start to the point where either boy or girl is like, just suck it up.
So hard.
Suck it up. Like, what's the problem? Okay. You're fine.
There's definitely a balance on each, right? There's, you know, don't be like Mr. Stoic, no emotion. Share your feelings, but then also, like, once you've shared and it's sorted,
yeah,
that's probably good.
Do you really want to know? Here's that, to answer the question to your listeners. Do you, why don't we share?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you really want to know?
Yeah.
I don't think you do.
Yeah.
You know, you might say you do, but you don't want it. It's fine. It's good. We're good.
Yeah.
I'm good. That's it. So I'm good. Don't worry about it. I'm fucking good.
I think the thing to understand too is that men are really good at just being like, taking that, do you really want to know what I'm thinking right now? Because what I'm thinking right now won't be what I'm thinking in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's cool. I'm in 5 minutes, everything can be cool. It's like boys on the playground. I might slap the shit out of you when we were friends. 5 minutes later, we're running around having fun.
Yeah.
You know? And I wonder if that's some of it, where it's just like, if I'm like, not right now, that's why. It's like, give me 10 minutes and we'll be all golden.
Yeah, you'll be back in the... It's true. They don't... There's a difference there. That's,
yeah.
That's something interesting to observe, that I'll be observing with this girl.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. The next question is kind of weird. And it might take a little bit of explaining. But it says, do men have mirror face? And what that means is, when you look in the mirror, this discussion came up at work. I work with mostly women. And they were talking about, when we look in the mirror, I have a certain face I make. Like, I'm in the mirror and I'm like checking myself out. And I'm like, okay. Like, and so I was wondering, she was like, don't you do that? And I'm like, no, I don't really look at myself in the mirror. Do you have a mirror face? Do you think men have a certain way that they view themselves in the mirror? Like a certain thing they do?
I know dudes that are like that and have seen it, like in bars or clubs and shit. It might be cocaine induced, but there are men that do that. Would that be a feminine trait? Would you say that's a feminine?
Maybe. I don't know. There's definitely guys who are really focused on how they look.
Yeah, I think maybe. That's like more of like a human nature psycho trait.
Yeah.
Not psycho, but I categorize.
I know what you mean. I know
like,
what you
you're
mean.
Fucking nuts. Like, yeah, get out of the mirror. You know, like,
yeah, I know you're.
What are you doing? Like, who are you really? I think that's a big ego thing to be like, I look, or you're trying to, man, you're projecting yourself on yourself, and it's like double. It's crazy.
Yeah.
In a sense, in my world, I mean, I look at myself in the, you know.
Yeah.
I've been trying to like, although I don't really grow that much facial hair, I'm not in that masculine sense. I can't grow a beard or anything. Oh, you
dude,
know?
It's a struggle, especially in Portland when everyone's like,
everyone's hey, got a beard.
Grow a beard. Fuck you.
We should sell fake beards. We should start making like a fake beard to wear around town. They'd probably sell out like no problem.
Dude, awesome. I'm in.
But I've been trying to shave, not just in the shower.
Yeah.
I've been trying to like wait till after the shower and look in the mirror and then shave and check myself out that way and be like, okay, my face, and like look at myself and like where I'm at, how I look, you know, whether I got bags under my eyes or if I'm looking like dehydrated, or I'm trying to like get an appearance of how I look. And it's been helping with my getting going, or just being like that self-affirmation of like, okay, I've shaved, got everything.
It's like your thing. Like, that's just how
you... Yeah, instead of just like ignoring that. Myself and like head down, shower, get out, shave in the shower, eat, not check your... Not really, like, I guess it's a quick little way to meditate or to like to get into yourself, but I'm definitely not looking at myself. But I already think of myself as being like extremely handsome.
Yeah, well, you are. You're a handsome motherfucker.
So I don't have like, I'm not really in there like,
yeah,
you know, because I've seen like the dudes are like, yeah, mirror man.
Yeah,
so
mirror
I was
man. Yeah.
In this club one time in a... There was like this, he was an older gentleman. He's probably my age, what I am now. Then I was way younger. He was probably 40.
Yeah.
But he's like on this, I'm trying to, for the listeners, I'm like elbow on the bar, like halfway, you know, like straddling the bar.
You're ready. You look like you're ready to go.
He had his drink in his hand and he was just like checking out the dance floor and like, hey, really friendly to everyone walking by. Hey, what's up? Hey. Yep. And then when people walked by or no one was looking at him, he would just right in the mirror, like looking past the bartender, like behind the bottles.
Fuck, I'm handsome.
He was just like, just checking himself out and like doing the like, hey, like practicing the looks, almost like that Saturday Night Live skit. But I saw that guy and then like turn and be like, hey, what's up? And he just sat there and was like, like the man duck face. It's almost like the chin up and like checking the chin. Like,
yeah.
You know where the girls do the duck?
Oh, like the guys
do like the
chin up.
Mm-hmm. Scratch it. The hair and my balding, a little bit of like that hairline, like in the back. Nope. Hair loss. That's for next podcast.
Oh, maybe.
How does that, like, you start getting older and the trend, like, going from, like, young stud to, like, 30s to 40s, still being there, having a, still a little bit of a grasp on your, like, youth?
I'm holding on to these beautiful locks as long as I can, man.
Dude.
I'm keeping this.
Physically shit starts changing. You, like,
I'm keeping this flow epic. I'm only 30 and physically it's starting to change already. It's like, ooh,
it's coming.
I'm like not recovering from that run as quickly as I used to.
I fucking watch where I'm stepping when I get off the couch.
Popping Achilles, just getting off the couch.
I just make sure. I'm like, ooh, bend at the knees.
Oh, man.
Bend at the fucking knees.
Cool. So these are just the last, some quick hitters here for you that I like end with. If you could travel back in time to visit your 16-year-old self, what would you say?
Start saving money.
Yeah.
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 Fucking take financing. Take money classes. Work on your money management.
Yeah. Learn how to exist in society a little better.
Yeah. Save fucking money. Make your money work for you. Yeah. I would be like, dude, just fucking find out how to start some sort of business and start making your money turn over for, you know, get ahead. Start now.
I like it.
Save money.
It's a good one. The greatest lesson you learned from your father, what not to do or to do.
Oh.
Could be one of the greatest lessons. Maybe the one that you hold dear.
Mm. That's a great one. I can only, like, I'm trying to think of putting into words, but as he would put it, as a, don't be stupid, you moron.
Whatever. That's got to, that's enough.
Yeah.
I get it.
Don't be stupid, you moron. You'd be like, wait, what?
That holds meaning to you, though. You know what that means.
Yeah.
I like it. And finally, if you could live the life of one man, real or fiction, who would it be and why?
John Stamos comes to mind.
Ooh, Uncle Jesse?
That guy seemed like he had it all, didn't he?
Handsome bastard.
Cut it out. I don't know. I don't really put like I don't put any like weight on questions like that.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't fucking know, you know?
I like it.
I'm of more of the model of like don't you wish you were me?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I like it. All right, Ed. Thanks for joining.
That's a pretty good way to end it.
I love it.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much, man. This has been fucking awesome.
Love it. This is the best. Love you, buddy.
Love you too, man.
Next time. Rogers, y'all. Love that dude. Give him a follow on Instagram and on Twitter. At PuckFortland is the handle there for both Instagram and Twitter. Listen to his podcast also of the same name, Puck Fortland, as I mentioned. Really great dude. I think you'd all, if you enjoy kind of some of the vibes I give off, I guess, I think you would really enjoy Ed as well. And I just wanted to also take the time to update you on Ed. Congratulations to Ed for having a healthy, beautiful baby girl. You now have two beautiful women in your life. Your beautiful
daughter and your rad wife. So congratulations on your beautiful family, Ed. You know, speaking of love, this conversation, and listening back several times now, came to me just at the right moment, because, you know, the more I talk about masculinity to men and becoming just less sure about this whole masculine and feminine energy type of thing, you know, what does it even mean? How do you balance it? Am I supposed to be leaning one way or another? I know these are words we use to describe certain traits, but labels are problematic when they become expectations for how one should act, right? They can start to become more harm than good if they define what is wrong or right. You know, masculine, feminine, Democrat, Republican, vegan, meat eater, all these evoke a certain us versus them type mentality. And, you know, they put a lot of pressure on people to be a certain way, or if you're not that way, you're quote unquote wrong. You know, and maybe it's time to just drop these labels and simply allow people to find balance. You know, allow boys to play with dolls if they want because it makes them feel free. Allow girls to dig in the dirt and code computers without shame because it rewards their personal sovereignty. You know, it's more about training kids into becoming a free adults. We can call it feminine and masculine energy if we want, but we all need to find balance between the two things, even though these two things are really hard to define. And there is no kind of set range on what it should be for men and women. It's just whatever makes us feel good, and we should lean into that. To me, being in touch with my feminine is when I am placing my attention on growth, and when I'm in my nurturing state, and when I'm feeling, intuiting, and sensing the world. It's being in a kind of in a state of divine love, really. Being in touch with my masculine, on the other hand, and still trying to figure out both of these is, but being in touch with my masculine is when I'm just kind of fearlessly inviting what is into my life without resistance. When I'm exploring the boundaries of my mind and body, and when I am just at peak availability and compassion, sharing compassion with everyone around me, that's kind of what makes me feel most masculine. I think as I, you know, start having these conversations and trying to define it for myself, that's why these conversations help, because I'm able to define it. You know, when my feminine, I guess, is out of balance, I feel like I'm catty, I'm sarcastic, I'm insecure, I'm envious, I'm jealous, I'm bitter. And I say feminine, I don't mean these are traits of an out of balance female. I just mean that these are traits of my out of balance feminine energy. Same thing, you know, my out of balance masculine, I start to feel fearful. I accept the pressures of society and accept what I'm told I should be, and don't reevaluate where I am in life. And I just kind of live on autopilot. I just kind of go, yep, sounds good. And just kind of float along. And neither of those feel good. In the long run, they may feel good in a moment, they may feel easy, but they're throwing me off balance. They're putting me in a place of where I don't want to be, where I just don't want to exist. And I'm trying to figure out how to keep the balance, keep the compassion, keep the freedom, keep the lack of resistance, keep that being in a state of divine love, and be okay with it. You know, Ed, during this conversation, really put a face on the balance that I'm speaking about. He talked about his dad wrestling with him, and while at the same time, his dad would tell him verbally how much he loved him. That is the balance that men seem to often miss. You know, it's more about the physical, just rough you up, let's wrestle, and then not verbally share the love part, which is so important. It reminded me of another email that my dad sent that I had mentioned in the intro. And it's just, this email is just a prime example of kind of what I'm talking about, with that verbally sharing love. And it sounds simple. Like, of course your dad loves you, but, and this is speaking for men or sons, boys, you know, even as father, son, when they become men, it's, I'm not sure how common it is for a dad to open up to their sons like this. So I'm going to, not read the whole thing because kind of the first half of it. Well, no, I'm going to read the whole thing. Cause I think it's kind of important for context. But I'm going to try to get through this without, without crying a little bit, to be honest. So this, this email was actually sent before the previous one that I read. This is October 22nd, 2011 at 4:12 PM. My dad writing to me, "Hey Brad, we keep crossing paths with our phone calls. I wanted to check in with you last night on my way to Dr. Fang's Taoist lecture, but missed you. It was good. He talked about immortality, rather a deep topic. I was really tired and nearly fell asleep in the meditation. I came right home without speaking to anyone and went straight to bed, very tired. I'm really trying to focus on my spiritual needs now, staying away from the temptations of beer, both for my spirit and my body. I think I've lost about 12 pounds now. Had a great day Friday at school. Quarterback and fourth period PE. My line was about 28 for 42, 0, and 10. And like luck, I caught one pass for a touchdown. That's 11 on the day. Calculate that rating. I had only about four boys in class, so they run routes and play quarter and play DB while I play quarterback for both teams. Very fun. Then in fifth period, I played some two-on-two basketball, but of course, my line there was nothing to brag about. We lost 11-9. You know basketball. I already know you know I am limited there. But the football dream lives on. But what I wanted to share with you is this. I am very proud of you. The way you take on your job at Pearl to heart and give so much of yourself. The way you've taken the challenge of getting into the U of O MBA program. The courage you are showing in attacking this difficult, demanding and frustrating GMAT challenge. The way you attack the journey, living life to its fullest, is truly inspiring to me. With you looking over my shoulder, I am a better, healthier, more spiritual man. I am truly blessed to have you both as a son and a friend. I love you deeply and wish many times you were here sharing adventures with me. But I think, as we both know, we must make our own journeys, live our own experiences. For me, Oakland has become my place for spirit quest. You will find yours, I have no doubt, much like that character in the Herman Hesse book. I've been watching George Harrison, Living in the Material World, which is the tale of a man who must balance his deep spiritual needs with the immense spiritual world he created while part of a little band from Liverpool. He is torn between these two worlds, often going back and forth. It is a moving, insightful, and incredible story. In this, I can relate to being torn between two worlds. Continue on your path, my son, friend, and inspirational guide. You are destined for greatness. I believe that from the bottom of my heart. These struggles are just the hurdles to challenge your commitment and fortitude. I have no doubts. I believe in you. Love, Dad. TGP. That's a, I'm so glad I have that email. but it's just, I mean, that I can look on, that I'll always have that to look back on, that really important with me that he shared all that. So as Ed likes to ask, what did you learn today? Well, Ed, I learned about balancing the masculine and the feminine as I see fit. You can be a warm, caring, nurturing man while having the confidence to not even give a fuck about wanting to be live another man's life. You just do you. And I learned how important it is for fathers to verbally state how much they love their sons. So important. And thank you for those lessons, Ed. Love you, Brocephus. As always, ladies, send me your questions for What Women Wonder. Email the show, mmprojectpod@gmail.com. or you can send them to me on Twitter at mmprojectpod. I also have an Instagram account with the same handle if you want to follow someone who doesn't post pictures. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you've made it this far, I am assuming that you at least are interested in what I have to say. So, you know, leaving a little 5 stars there and a comment on what you like, what could be improved would be great. You can always email me those too or tweet at me. And just rating and reviewing is the best way you can support the show. All right, y'all. Thanks again for joining. Be present. Stay open. Much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts and had to think about it and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough.